Experience the unconventional, the unpredictable, and the completely unorthodox. The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
Hey, hello, and welcome to the Late Night Alternative. Alternative presenter, because Ian's having a night off, as he suggested he might do. So we're going to crack on without him and hope that he gets better soon.
Yeah, get better soon, Ian.
Have a sleep, have a relax, try and just unwind a little bit.
Yeah, and I hope he's not listening to this nonsense. That's not going to make him feel better in
a
hurry.
I hope he's not. So if you want to give us a ring, 03444991000, same old nonsense as usual. We'll have a few things to talk about, but really it's down to you. If you want to talk about something different, this is your show too. 03444991000. So here's the deal. This is the week I bought a dash cam for my car.
So is that kind of a glorified way to spy on the rest of the world?
Yeah.
or to tell on them when they do something naughty?
Boom, you got it. Because counting up the number of occasions where someone has done something dodgy on my way home from work and I've had nowhere to go with it.
Well, what do you mean by dodgy?
Okay.
So, flashers.
So here we go. Driving alongside me while peering into the car, like really slowly.
Weird.
At the same time, cutting me up.
Yeah.
And then slamming brakes on.
Okay. Oh, so they're doing this kind of aggressive driving.
Well, there's aggressive driving and then there's pervy driving. And then last Friday, here's the thing. This is the one that got me. And I thought, right, enough is enough. Last Friday, I was driving home and I pulled up at some lights, like 1:30 in the morning, and a car pulls alongside me honking its horn.
Mm.
And I was kind of thinking, you know, you don't connect at that point of the morning. It can never be anything good, can it really? Checked my lights weren't off or something. They weren't
right.
Trying to alert me to some kind of driving problem that I was having. I thought, no, that's not it. And I kind of tried not to look at them. But we're stuck at lights together. And it became apparent they're like hanging out of the car window next to me. And then they pulled in front of me, kind of stopping me from getting to the lights.
Weird.
And he's hanging out of the car window. I think there's two guys in there. And this guy's like, all right, darling, you know, oh, you're gorgeous. And I was thinking,
oh, so charming.
You can't have known what I looked like when you pulled up alongside me. It was just sheer luck. They're just, you know, being...
That you were gorgeous. You were actually gorgeous.
They couldn't possibly see it. And by the way, by the time it gets to the end of the show, no one's gorgeous anymore.
Oh, it's, I don't know. I beg to differ,
well,
Catherine.
It was just... And then in the end, I kind of found myself stuck at these lights, this guy in front of me. And I just went into complete kind of survival mode where I was kind of bubbling up thinking, right, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I gave him the old, oh, come on, mate.
Yeah.
But inside I was thinking, please don't get out of the car. Please don't get out of the car. And when the lights changed, I had to drive around him to get away.
Oh, yuck.
It was just horrible. So I told this story on air earlier in the week, on Monday. And a few people said to me, you need to get a dash cam. And I was thinking, why should I have to spend money on these idiots?
So this is all a defense when your corpse is lying dismembered on the side of the road.
That or ammunition for Twitter.
Okay.
Because a couple of people said to me, why didn't you get his registration? It's kind of difficult when they're parked virtually on top of your car.
Right.
And then when I was driving away, I did look in the rearview mirror, but only to check they weren't following me.
Yeah.
And it's only afterwards you start thinking, well, how would I take this any further anyway? Because at that point, you know, I didn't want to get my phone and make it obvious that I was taking a picture of them because I was trapped. They could have got out of the car and done whatever.
What are they up to?
I don't know.
What's their end game? I mean,
maybe they thought I was going to go, yeah, fair enough, pull over.
Yeah, like, I'm really interested. I like your style.
I love that. There's nothing I love more than being accosted at lights.
You're hard up. They're obviously hard up.
Exactly.
So,
it's 1:30 in the morning. What goes on? Other side of the road stays the side of the road.
Oh, God. If you're lucky.
Or they just thought, let's mess with her.
Yeah.
I think
they're
the latter.
Bored.
I think the latter.
Well.
So anyway, yeah, I've got this thing now. And so I'm recording really boring journeys and no one's doing anything. So.
And so then what actually happens if something bad happens? You go home and then you scroll.
I had the footage.
You have the footage. You scroll through the footage.
Yep. And I either take to the police. Will they care? Or I'll whack it up on Twitter.
The only thing that's ever happened to me that's a little strange in the car is pulling up behind a car at a light in Washington, D.C. many, many years ago in the middle of the night, no other traffic around. And the guy didn't move and the light went from red to green to red to green to red to green. And then finally, my friends and I got out of the car, and the driver in front had expired.
What?
He had died behind the wheel. So I wish I had a dash cam for that.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a little rough.
Was he old?
Yeah, it was old.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But at least he wasn't pestering me.
There is that. It's a silver lining.
He was keeping his hands to himself.
Wow.
Just between him and Jesus.
Maybe the rapture happened.
It may have happened and I was left behind.
Yeah. And we would never know.
I think that I'm probably going to be left behind when the rapture happens.
Me too. But I think we'll have a better time.
Yeah, this is totally like 24-hour nonstop rapture. This world in SE1.
Do you want to have a word with Alan Caddick? He's going to bring the heavens to the earth right now for us.
Okay, bring it.
In his usual style. Hi, Alan Caddick.
Hi, girls.
Hey.
Hi. One question. Where's the bus tonight?
Well, if you were listening yesterday, do you listen to anything other than the bits you're on?
Well, I'll try and catch up on YouTube.
So he said yesterday that he was feeling a little bit kind of wrung out and stressed and tired. And so he's going to have a night off and go to bed at a reasonable time, you know, like normal people do. So hopefully he'll sort that out and be back as right as rain
on Monday.
But, you know, if he doesn't, he doesn't.
We've got Special K's on tonight.
The Special K's, I like that.
Yeah, Special K's.
What have you been doing today, Alan Caddick?
I've just been tidying up the living room, doing some reorganising.
Oh, yeah.
And with me being officially single.
Not that he mentions it every time. So what's been going on with that? Are you organising your love life?
Well, it's on the back burner at the moment.
Oh, man. So what happened?
I've just begin to think no girl will go out with me. I'm still waiting for Holly to make a move.
Well, I think you might be waiting a while. She was just fresh out of a relationship. You don't want someone on the rebound, Alan.
Well, it was in the idea to set me up with Holly.
I don't think he... Do I say this? Yeah, I don't think he was serious.
I misread it.
Oh, man. You're not the first man to say those words. But it is nice of you to recognise it, and now we move on. So what are you going to do?
Look like it's back to plenty of fists for me.
Is that what you go on?
Yeah.
Okay, and so how's it been working out for you? I don't know how it works.
I'm on the line, but I don't get many bites.
Oh. So you're putting the bait out there?
Yeah.
And what's the difference between Plenty of Fish and the other ones? Like, I know there's OkCupid and, of course, Tinder.
But Tinder, you swipe.
Yeah.
With Plenty of Fish, you don't.
Is Plenty of Fish more about sort of personality and stuff like that rather than just whether you fancy someone?
Yeah, but most of those I might go for a cheap one-night stand.
What, on Plenty of Fish?
Yeah.
Gosh.
I want more than a cheap one-night stand. I would go for, like, a slightly more costly three-night encounter.
Mini break.
Yeah, mini break. City break.
Well, I was thinking of a week away.
You're taking my mini break and upping it to a full 7 days. I like your style.
That might be a bit intense if you've only just met them.
Oh, yeah.
What if you don't get along?
Well, it would be a nice holiday either way.
Would it?
We can set a destination.
Well, yeah.
I mean, what would be your ideal holiday, Katie?
Oh, my ideal holiday...
Hang on, you do realise this is...
I'm walking into a trap.
Yeah.
It's a honey trap.
No honey trap, right? I'm just genuinely curious. What would be your ideal holiday?
Well, you know what I like is... I love history, so I like to go to places where I can learn stuff about... the olden days. So I like natural beauty, but I also like some ruins, and I don't mean the people I'm with.
So if you're in Birmingham, in the Midlands, you can go to the Black Country Museum.
Oh, that sounds like a hell of fun. What do you do there?
Well, it's like stepping into a time warp back to the 1950s.
Oh,
that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I like that kind of stuff. But it's indoors. I like to be outdoors.
It's an outdoor place.
Oh.
It's an actual working museum where you've got an old-fashioned pub, an old-fashioned coal mine, an old-fashioned school.
I'm seeing a pattern. An old-fashioned...
Cobblers.
Cobblers.
and you want to chuck a pony there.
Do they have, I went somewhere once when I was a kid, and I can't remember where it was, but I have a vague memory of like a street. It might have been York, but there was lots of talk of pit ponies and stuff.
Yeah, that might have been the Black Country Museum.
Oh, it might have been.
All roads lead to the Black Country Museum.
It sounds like, whether I've been to it already, I certainly need to go now because it's where it's at. Would you go on a date there, though? Isn't that a little bit, I don't know, industrial and bleak?
Well, learning about history, which Kate is into.
Yeah, and anyway, by contrast, you would just seem like a bright, sparky, little spunky fellow compared to the bleakness of ye olden days.
It's true.
Well, like I say, it's one of the best things to come out of the Midlands.
Is it?
Yeah.
What, better than Noddy Holder?
On the same scale, even better than Musical Youth.
Wow.
Past the Duchy.
That is a proud boast, Alan Caddick. Sounds like this is the place we need to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Ah, well, good luck with plenty of fish. Watch out for the hoochies.
Okay, I'll speak to you
soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Alan Caddick, bless him. 03444991000. Let's talk to Manny, also from the Midlands. Hey, Manny.
Good evening.
Hey, have you been to the Black Country Museum?
Oh, probably with school, I think. Oh, God, about 30 years ago.
Yeah, well, apparently we haven't lived if we haven't been there.
Really?
Exactly. So what are you up to?
Nothing.
Nothing.
But listen to you today. Oh. I did listen a bit in there the other day. I thought Alan said plenty of fisting.
No. What? No, that's a different website.
Oh,
flipping heck, man. You've been on 2 minutes.
I thought he said, I'll do plenty of fisting.
All right, yeah, we got it the first time.
Yes.
No, he said plenty of fish, which is quite a different proposal, mostly. So,
how are you?
I'm all right. It's nice to hear your voice. You're sounding a little bit perkier every time you ring.
Oh, no, yeah. It's better mood.
Yeah.
Better place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How's the lady with you? I haven't heard it. I think I've heard it before a few times on a Friday.
Katie Puckrick.
Oh, yeah, you know what, Kath, you neglected to introduce me, so I'm a mystery guest.
Manny, Katie, Manny.
Hi, how do you do?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very, very well.
No, that's good.
Katie likes good perfume and...
kittens.
Kittens. Manny, what do you like? All right, best not.
There's something very sinister about that. About that chuckle.
I'm not allowed to go there anymore.
Oh.
What's that? What is going on?
Never mind.
You are some. You're mining some guitar in there.
What's happened to Ian? Has he got the flu?
No, he's a bit stressed. He's stressed out and he needs a break. So you know,
needs battery charging, doesn't he?
He does. He needs it plugged in.
He's an understandable person, isn't he? He sort of does listen to everybody, but it's when you go that little bit extra and then pisses him off.
What do you mean?
You know, I remember a couple of weeks ago.
Did you?
Come on and started talking rubbish at him.
Had you had a drink?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, not me.
Oh, when someone else did.
Come on. Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't remember him falling out with you. He's got a soft spot for you.
He don't fall out with me. No, it was another guy who come on and started talking rubbish.
Oh, that happens quite a lot.
Yeah. Not me. I don't think he'd do that to me.
No, of course he wouldn't.
No.
I don't think you'd do that to him.
No, I wouldn't. No. Too much respect for him and you.
Ah, you're a good one. You're a good one. Well, it's
you take care.
You too. It's nice to hear you sounding better.
Sometime next week.
Good. Keep on keeping on, Manny.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
Do you want to get some news from stateside?
Yeah. What, do we have some news?
We just so happen to have our very own American correspondent. Hey, Chuck Winkle.
Hey, how you doing over there?
We're fine. Do you recognise the accent? Can you place him?
I think that's from South Clownland.
What do you think, Chuck? No.
They're very close. I'm from Boston, New York.
Boston, right, New York, that very famous double city.
Where about you from, Kitty Cat?
Kitty Cat, I think he's addressing me. I'm actually originally from Virginia.
West Virginia, right?
No, just Virginia. I know you Brits love to conflate the two, but I'm from Virginia. West Virginia is a separate state.
Chuck Winkle is not a Brit. He's obviously an American. And you are based in Virginia, Chuck, because you are a White House guy, right?
Virginia is kind of between Virginia and South Lake City. It's in that kind of localized area. I just wanted to know, I've got an American on there with you.
Yes.
Just want to know what you think about Trumpy.
What she thinks about Trumpy? Well, first of all, give us a little rundown of what's been going on in Trumpsville, because things are moving apace, aren't they?
Yeah, kind of. It all came after the photo came out of him kissing Vladimir Putin's pool behind. It's very controversial, actually, at the moment. And we've gone from lots of hot water.
Lots of hot water. Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it, for Trump? Do you think he can pull through? Because he seems like he's, you know, he's Teflon, isn't he? Just denies it and moves on.
Listen, you know, I'm Democratic all the way, and I support my man 100%. He's doing us Democrats proud. And I got to say just one more thing, Katie Pulkrick, what do you think about Trump?
Well, the sooner he dies of some sort of coronary or colonic obstruction, the better for the world. But until then, buckle yourself in, because it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Do you feel proud when he lands in his little plane?
No, he never. Nothing he does makes me feel proud or plowed. I do feel a little plowed emotionally, metaphorically.
Do you like his little haircut?
Well, if he had any hair, I guess. But I don't think that's what you could call the stuff on his head.
Right. Kathleen?
Yes?
I'm kind of scared of this gal.
You should be.
I feel like my masculinity is going to look a bit smaller.
Yeah, but you're loving it, aren't you?
I just like to say, yeah, I got a Twitter page. I got a Twitter page.
You got a Twitter page? No. What's your Twitter page?
Chuck_Winkle.
What?
Chuck_Winkle.
Chuck_Winkle.
You going to follow me? Or?
No.
Katie?
Probably not.
But enjoy it. It'll be fun. Especially if you're tweeting about Trump. Mm. That's where all the good stuff is.
It's only because I don't really believe you're genuinely from Salt Lake City, New York, Boston, or wherever you said.
I mean, I got a picture on there with an American flag. I mean, what do you want?
Proof. Yeah. Well, I think that pretty much says it all.
Right.
Yeah. Bit awkward, Chuck. But good luck with it. Excellent stuff. And bye. Let's talk to Stu. Hey, Stu.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I was shocked to hear what happened with you and your car and all that leering stuff.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
It's just weird, isn't it?
Yeah, very weird. I, as a male, obviously, I have no idea what that's like, but it sounds almost like Mad Max 1 and 2 and 3 when someone's leering into your car and doing all that kind of malarkey, you know?
Yeah, right.
You just don't need it. You just don't need it, especially that time of the night stroke morning.
No, not so.
But I bet you've had dicey things happen, because, you know, people don't generally ask me out for fights on the road, but, you know, I have plenty of male friends who've got stories about that.
Yeah, it's just quite shocking to hear, that's all.
I'm glad you're shocked, because it kind of proves that it's not normal.
Genuinely am quite shocked about it.
Thanks, Stu.
Never mind.
What else did you want to say?
If mice are faithful, are they monogamous or monogamous?
It's a big if. I don't know about the status of monogamous. Are they?
I think it's got to be monogamous. It just sounds better.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, that could work.
Just throwing it in there.
I love the way you throw it in there. I caught it. And
I don't have any insights on mouse romantic behavior, but I was just reading about necrophiliac crows.
Oh my God.
And that is taking loving and devotion a little bit too far. So apparently they've been doing some crow studies, and it turns out that normally dead crows are a warning sign to the alive crows that there's danger about. But sometimes when hormones are running high, a few crows might swoop down and try their luck on the dead crows.
Mick from Edinburgh, can I get your immediate reaction to that tale?
I'd like to apologise at the first instance because I wasn't actually listening.
Oh, Mick. Right, you can hang on then. 03444991000, you're listening to Talk Radio.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. You never know just where the conversation will take you. On Talk Radio.
03444991000, let's talk to Mick. Hiya, Mick.
I'm still here.
You're back.
I am back. Are you back?
I think so. Are you back?
I never went away.
Good. Mick, what did you want to say?
Well, first of all, can we have some intelligent conversation?
Go on then.
Because your previous callers were just a bit strange.
Go on then.
Well, the lassie, sorry, or the girl, I apologise for saying lassie. The lassie is with you. It's from Virginia, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I used to live in Virginia for quite a few years.
Oh, where are you? Where were you living?
I lived in Virginia Beach for quite a numerous amount of years, and I used to work in Norfolk, Virginia.
Did you work in the military?
Well, actually, I did. I was in the British Army.
Yeah, because that's a big military area down there in Southern Virginia.
Well, yeah, Norfolk, Virginia is a big military base, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, American Navy is like the biggest American. It was the biggest naval base in the world.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that. I'm saying I know, but I don't know.
Aren't you a military kid?
Yeah.
But you're obviously from Northern Virginia. I'm just picking up. I kind of thought that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm from right outside Washington D.C., Northern Virginia area. So that's kind of the greater metropolitan area of our nation's capital.
I know it very well.
Yeah, it's kind of a big commuter area. So how come you know it if you were based down in Southern Virginia?
I was in the British Army, and I got out of the Army, and I met a girl who was in the American Navy. It's cut a long story short, and I ended up in Norfolk, Virginia, which is a massive naval base, which is the biggest in the world there.
Yeah.
So I lived there for 6-7 years. Before I came back home, but yeah, fantastic place,
and
fantastic people.
Were you sad to leave Virginia?
Yeah, to be fair, yeah.
Yeah.
Virginia Beach, I'm sure you have been there.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a big holiday area if you live in Virginia, Virginia's on the coast of America. It's like halfway between New York and Florida for people who aren't familiar with the placement. And there's a lot of coastline. There's a lot of crabbing. But Virginia Beach is lovely.
Yeah, I still have my brother lives actually out there now. He lives in Chesapeake, in Virginia. Do you know
Chesapeake.
On the border.
Yep, so that's right. That's near Maryland, and that is where you get all your crabs, all of your soft shell crabs.
Chesapeake is down on the North Carolina border, isn't it?
No, it's actually a little bit. It's in the middle of Virginia, so and it actually is nearer to Maryland as well. So,
no, it's not actually Chesapeake. Right down is down on the border of North Carolina.
Let's have a Google war.
You're not going to win this war.
Oh God, this sounds like fighting talk. Suddenly, I'm interested.
Okay, well, I'm going to go. I'm looking. I'm pulling up a picture now, and I'm looking at Chesapeake Bay.
I'm quite geographically sound. Trust me.
But it's not in the south, so I'm just looking at the picture now. Looking at the satellite data, but anyway, this is
the North Carolina border. I used to have a girlfriend who was from Morganton in North Carolina, which is right on the western part of North Carolina, which is beautiful, where they did the film Last of the Mohicans. I've been there.
Yeah, but the Chesapeake, the bay actually is in central Virginia. So.
The Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, which is lengthy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is on right on the coast. I get you. I understand what you're saying. But The border of Chesapeake is on the border of North Carolina.
Oh, are you talking about a town called Chesapeake rather than Chesapeake Bay?
I am, yeah.
Oh, okay. There's where we were at.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Yes. Okay. So I love these sorts of resolutions. We're both right.
Yep.
I apologize.
Okay. Yeah. Well, nobody won there.
No, we both won. We're both winners.
Radio lost. 03444991000. Speaking of which, hi, Mo.
Hello?
Yep.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm about to find out. Go on.
You guys, honestly, are better than Ian Lee.
Okay.
No.
Because?
Because I think that Ian Lee sort of controls the show, like, sort of in a, like, dictate.
Like this. 03444991000, if you want to send me a message, you can do that. I'd love to hear from you. Not you, Mo. 03444991000. You can tweet Talk Radio, at Talk Radio, and you just put Talk and your message to 87222, and that'll cost you 25p per message on top of your standard network rate. You can also tweet me, at Flippin' Kath, and Katie is?
Katie Puckrick.
Deal with it. Should we talk about something? Should we have some intelligent conversation?
Yeah, I don't have any of that. But I did want to mention, you know, when we met up tonight for our nosh, we always have our little nosh.
You can't really say that.
Why not?
That means something different to the English.
Oh, no. It's a Jewish, innocent Jewish word that means, okay, it doesn't mean that. It just means it's like a slap up. Is that okay to say?
Well,
because to me, that sounds a little frisky.
On this show, I would avoid it.
A
bite to eat, even, I think, probably could get contorted
suspect
on here. Yeah, we there are a lot. The pervert quotient on this show is high.
I know, and I'm part of the problem. Anyway, so we met to have a powwow. Is that all right to say? While consuming some calories. And I decided in our Japanese rice bowls that we were both enjoying that I was going to have some kimchi, which is that pickled cabbage stuff. That
you love that stuff.
I love that stuff. It's supposed to be good for your digestion and all this sort of, you know, probiotic nonsense.
Yeah.
But all I know is I just like that crazy tang. It's got that twangy tang. But what it also does is it gives you kimchi burps for the whole rest of the night. So I was strategically thinking, am I going to gross Kath out in our stuffy studio for 3 hours belching pickled cabbage on you? Have you noticed anything like that?
No, but also you've got to remember who I normally work with. So, I mean, it's nice that you care.
I do care. And I do think about that. But it's also that thing of sometimes the most delicious foods are the stinkiest.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of do that moral calculus, or a kind of like weighing the pros and the cons of what do you care most about, your own personal pleasure or the comfort of the person you're with.
Yeah. For example, I know for a fact that my husband tonight had smoked haddock for his tea.
Oh, because you weren't there.
Because I wasn't there. Well, I don't mind it. It's actually nicer if you're eating it together, because somehow the smell kind of develops while you're there, and it's not the same as, for example, when I walk in tonight, when I get back from work, I will walk into basically a butcher's curtain of smell of, whoa, somebody else's dinner.
Unpleasant.
And it's a particularly stinky one, that.
Yeah, it does cling. Oh, help.
Oh, poor Periscope. Never mind. I'll sort you out in a minute.
And but you know what's really bad for that is rice cracker breath. So I love rice crackers. Those again are those crazy Far Eastern cocktail tidbits that you might find accompanying your poo-poo platter at a tiki lounge. And
right, you're gonna have to explain tiki lounge to me.
Okay, so tiki lounge is a kitschy Polynesian themed bar that involves lots of South Pacific tribal masks hung on the walls, and some various fishing nets strung from the ceiling, and lots of fake Hollywood-looking huts that are built into the banquettes that are where you sit, and you're served giant skull head mugs with about 17 straws in them and about 5 gallons of rum. And it's like a place where you're going to go and get into some kind of frisky business.
Oh.
Yes.
Why? Because it's got a kind of,
it's got a seedy vibe.
It's
basically, especially if you go in a late afternoon before there's anybody. I am pretty much narrating what I did the other night, which was to lure a gentleman friend there with mischief on my mind.
Uh-huh.
I didn't get my leg over, but...
But you drank a lot of rum?
Yeah, hope springs eternal. I'm not giving up the pursuit yet. It's sort of low-level sexual predation.
But the thing is, if you start with that, where'd you go?
What, you start with the tiki hut?
With the down and dirty, slightly retro, kitsch, yeah. Bit of fun. I mean, he's obviously, you know, he's a fun person.
Yeah, I hope so.
So
if he knows what's good for him.
He will be.
He will be by the end of this by beating it into him. Yeah, where do you go from there? Well, that's the thing is that you have to be constantly creative. I like to go high-low. So mm-hmm. then the next thing might...
Surprise.
Yeah, so I might go, you know... Oh, the next thing I did was I lured him to the Wallace Collection in Central London and, you know, showed him some Baroque, a Rococo, a go-go type fixtures and fittings with a bunch of old people who just fallen off a tour bus.
That's great. So the next one is going to be back to...
Yeah, back to sordid sleaziness.
Oh, God, I love this.
But anyway, so the reason why we got onto this was the kind of things that you might be served to eat at a tiki lounge. I went to Trader Vic's downtown London, central London. But you do get things like rice crackers, mm-hmm. and they're delicious and Moorish, and you just have to keep munching on them like some sort of insatiable hound. But they just wave these guffs of corn-flavored stench from your gaping maw as soon as you chew into them.
Right. Yeah. Also, aren't they really salty?
Yeah, they're really salty.
So, you know, if there's any kissing action, you're going to be like...
I'm not very strategic, am I? So this
you're
is
going to be like two mummies, all dried and shriveled.
Desiccated. Oh, that is a deliciously unattractive. Okay, so speaking of deliciously unattractive,
yeah.
I'm having a problem with lingering testicle smell.
Oh my God.
This is a problem. And the big problem is that no actual testicles are involved, and that is that's a sadness to me. But it's to do with the fact that my sports kit for my various workout exercises, they're not drying properly, so they're getting that kind of mildewy smell.
Musty.
Yeah, musty. So first of all, like, my sports bra came out of the, I don't know, the rack that I had it hanging in the sun, and it did smell a little bit like dog paws, like it was a combination of corn chips and wet fur, and that was bad enough, because of course it gets reactivated once you
Warm up.
Yeah, when you warm up. You put that sports bra on, you go for the gusto, you go for the burn. But now there is a distressingly testicular fug that is haunting my actual frame because of the way the mildew has just gone. It's just gone AWOL. And
putting perfume on top of that is just going to make it more heady, isn't it?
I've tried the perfume. It does smell like an exciting night out on the town. It does suggest more fun than I've actually been having in the kibbles and bits department. And I want to stress that I'm not actually against the smell of testicles.
No, in their place.
If there's a time and a place for everything, if they're on actual testicles, I am here for it. I'm like pulling up a chair. I've got my knife and fork ready. I've got my serviette tucked under my chin. But yeah, not when my clothes smell like testicles.
Not unexpected. Testicle smells, no.
How do I get the musty testicular smell out of my clothes?
Can you help? If you've had this problem, there's no shame in it. It's happened to us all at some point. You may not have recognized it as testicle smells. You may just have thought, oh God, that's not dried properly. 03444991000.
Is it? I think it's something like you can soak it in white vinegar, but then it just smells...
Then you're going to smell like chips.
Yeah, no, you smell like chips. I really just want to smell like my fresh and lovely self.
Like a person.
Like a person with maybe a little bit of a farmyard, a hint of barnyard.
Yeah.
A mystique.
But, you know, you can't go without the sports bra. It's going to have to be resolved somehow.
Yeah. It's going to have to. I've tried everything, Catherine. I've washed it, put it in the hot sun. I've put it on the hot water boiler to, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Sit, stand, walk on YouTube is suggesting petrol in a match.
What, on me? Just to burn myself up? No. Conflagration.
Just end it.
Yeah, you just end it. I give up. Yeah.
Right. So please help. I mean, you've heard it. It's a serious problem for our age. 03444991000. Tattoos. Have you ever been tempted?
Never, never, never,
no, and
never,
you're cool.
Never, never.
I remember when you were on The Word, I did crave your stripy highlights that you had.
Oh, yeah. In my hair.
Yeah.
Not on my actual body.
No, that I thought was odd.
Yeah, no, I never did. Do you have a tattoo?
No. I can't decide on stuff that I'm going to keep for the day.
Here's the thing. It's one thing if you were around in Moby Dick times and you were a sea salt and you got an anchor on your bicep,
yeah, or
like
a dancing hula girl.
Or maybe you're in a Russian prison and you need to get a prison tattoo to stay alive and to show that you're with the right gang,
right,
and, you know, not to be interfered with in a very painful fashion against your will. So you need the right tattoo to protect yourself. But otherwise, if you're just a, you know, Kardashian, like, basic bimbo or himbo, I'm including both sexes. I don't know. I just think it's a bit basic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a bit.
Well, but they're all the rage these days. Maybe it's just just our age. The thing is, what I noticed was when I was about 19, 20, some friends of mine started getting tattoos, right? And they were all kind of the same thing.
What were they?
Well, it started with dolphins on the hip. This is how you date someone these days.
Yes.
And I mean, like, instead of carbon dating, not
going
out of them. Right. So early 90s, very blue dolphins on the old hip.
What about butterflies? Wasn't that a 90s thing?
On the shoulder.
All right.
Then it came. Then there was like a band of flowers around the upper arm, or sometimes barbed wire.
Oh, wow.
That
hard.
Was good. Yeah.
Punk rock.
Then as things moved on, the old tramp stamp down the back.
And what was the stamp?
Well, it was kind of a tribal thing.
Okay.
Like a windy, spiky, generally pointing down to the crack of your backside.
All right.
That kind of vibe. And now it's like the full sleeve thing and sometimes like up the neck.
Huh.
And people colouring their ears in like just completely black.
Wow. Well, you know what? Being, you know, rotting, once you're a cadaver,
you'll get that look.
You'll get that look. So don't be in a hurry because that's going to happen.
I look at my kids and I think that beautiful, flawless skin.
Poreless.
At some point.
Is going to, like, all. I just would say, just think about, you know, a few years on when your grandchild addresses you. Hey, Grandma, what's that wrinkly picture of Cowpats that I can barely make. I mean, they get smudgier, don't they, as you age?
And I think
and they fall into the cracks of your crevices and your wrinkles.
I think they're better these days. They are quite expensive,
okay,
right? They are better. You know, you get what you pay for. But I do remember the ones that my friends got in the 90s. They did start to get a bit fuzzy and faded quite quickly.
Like pixelated, like a decaying VHS tape or something. A poor anemic dolphin. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can be swayed. You know, I'll take it on a case-by-case basis. I won't completely reject out of hand somebody as just unsuitably basic, I suppose. But it is kind of a damning indictment if they have, especially if they have some kind of goofy, their hero who's, you know, they got a bad caricature of somebody they thought was fantastic, like, you know, Sid Vicious, but then it turns out it looks like, you know, Manny from the corner shop or something.
Yeah. Well, let me run down, if you were thinking of maybe changing your mind, you know.
All right.
You're out there, you're an attractive woman, there is some skin there.
There's
you
a
could,
lot of
you
skin
you could use
here.
As a canvas.
Right.
Right, so here's what the most popular tattoos of 2018
okay,
are so
give
far.
Give me guidance.
For your consideration.
Right.
Sexy side boob tattoos, Katie Puckrick.
Oh, no.
So they're going underneath your boob there.
Okay.
And this illustration here in the Daily Star Online fashion and beauty section, you've got some a nice mermaid going from armpit towards your nipple.
Okay, so here's something to point out to the young ladies who thought that was a good idea.
One day you won't be able to see it.
That's right. There's a subsidence and there's a continental drift.
Yeah,
in that area.
It's all about the side boob.
Yeah. Well,
I should have known the Daily Star. It said the most popular tattoos. I was thinking there might be some variation. It's just generally an excuse to look at the side of women's boobs.
I love it.
Very nice. But yeah, like you
said. But are there other things in the side boob? Is it always just a dolphin?
Nope. That one's got an octopus.
Ew.
Carrying the marine theme. Feather. Some flowers.
So there's always like tentacles involved. So whether it's
generally. Oh, there's a little hummingbird. Although, again, pointing towards the area.
And there's no... How about for the lads? Do the lads get side... What do they have?
Strangely, they're not mentioned in this.
Strangely.
It seems to be just an excuse to look at young women's breasts.
Yes.
Which, as you say, are not always going to look like that.
That's... Yeah. The perk factor is not going to stand the test of time.
Bless them, though.
They're going to find.
Do you remember the pencil test?
Yes, I remember the pencil test. I remember being really young, like, I don't know, 13, and doing it, and the pencil fell right out. And then, but that was a problem because I felt at that time inadequate, that I wasn't stacked. You know, I bought into this whole, you know, you're not a woman unless you have, you know, BAPS for the ages. And now I get
a 5-pack of Bic under there.
Yeah. So there's a pencil can snugly. I could probably tuck a couple of pencils away. Now.
There were some stupid tests, weren't they, for just how insecure you're supposed to feel in magazines.
Yeah, like how you know, different ways to hate yourself.
Yeah.
The pencil test. But see, that could go either way, because it's either saying you're so perky that you can't have the pencil, or you could slant that in the other way and say, well, you're not very well endowed and you're not, therefore, you're not like Playboy ready or Victoria's Secret ready.
Yeah.
Victoria's Secret, the petting zoo for rock stars. Have you, do you ever see, it is really a petting zoo for rock stars. It's just...
It's a catalogue. They pick one out.
Yeah. It's, or you see them at the fashion, at the actual Victoria's Secret fashion show, the various young guns of hair metal or, you know, whatever genre there is today. And they're going and picking out, it's like going to Battersea Dog and Cat's home and they're picking out their next pet.
I thought it was all about bras and pants. But yeah, you're right. The front row is not generally...
It's a bra and pants, you know, fashion show. I really don't think we need a fashion show for that. Unless
we know how they go.
Yes, yes.
03444991000, Matt, Jerry and newish James. We'll come to you in just a second.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. Speech Radio with a difference. Talk Radio.
Someone's just sent me the most delightful tattoo. It's a tattoo on the lower back, the usual traditional tramp stamp position, and it is a pair of bicycle handlebars.
That is just awfully literal. I find that so literal. I think if you are that, if you have to spell it out to that degree, I mean, you really are below basic.
Do you think the tattoo artist has a duty to say, no, come on?
The tattoo artist should have a duty of care just to say, I know you don't have any brain cells and I have a couple more than you do and I'm going to donate some and just say no, make an executive decision.
Let's find out whether we've got any tramp stamps here. Hello, Matt.
Hiya.
Hiya.
Are you a tattooed man?
I'm not, no, but I have an alternative term for tramp stamp, which is arse antlers.
Oh my God, that's exactly the thing, the image I was trying to portray, that kind of twisty,
like briar patch.
Exactly.
Or it's sort of Celtic.
Yeah. But not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My ex has got one of those now. She's with a younger model and emulated the design on her back and got one of those done. She's like 42 years old, and I'm thinking, no.
Ah, bless her, though, for trying.
Yeah.
I
feel bad, though, because I just held forth on being anti-tattoo, and that's snobby of me. I guess other people,
I mean, you could say that, but...
But he doesn't mind, because you're talking about his ex.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, say what you like.
What's going on with you, Matt?
I saw on Twitter earlier that you posted a few topics and it brought a horrendous memory flooding back, which I thought I'd buried a long time ago, about dodgy landlords.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because I was one.
How dodgy were you?
Well, it wasn't deliberately dodgy, but after I met my now ex, we both lived in London and I let my flat out and moved in with her. And the guys that moved in were a little bit complainy and, you know, constantly were asking me to come around and sort of fix little things, like they wouldn't even replace their own light bulbs.
Oh, you're kidding me. Time,
no, they were really quite irritating. This was going back a long way now. So
Were they grown, finished people?
Early 20s.
All right, okay.
Yeah. And they called me one weekend because something had gone wrong that required me to turn up with a toolbox and a drill. So I turned up at the place and I walked up the three flights of stairs with my toolbox in one hand and my drill in the other. And at the time, I'd been on a diet and losing weight. And so just as I reached the top of the stairs and knocked on the door, my trousers fell down.
What? That sounds like an elaborate setup.
Yeah.
Confessions of a window cleaner.
Yeah. Ding dong.
Door opened and there's me standing there with the drill box in one hand, toolbox in the other, with the trousers around my ankles.
Oh, beautiful.
Never been so mortified in my entire life.
Well, did they ask you over again?
They didn't seem to put them off. But
that's hilarious. I didn't think that could really happen in real life.
You wouldn't think it, would you? You couldn't make it up. But my God, yeah, I was absolutely, literally wanted the earth to swallow me up.
Oh, my word. No, I was talking about dodgy landlords. I saw this story, and apparently it's an increasing trend because young people are skint and some people push their luck, that some creepy blokes will offer women free bed and board in exchange for sexual favours. Yeah,
that's just wrong.
It's wrong, but it's kind of inevitable, isn't it?
Guy in, I think there's a guy in Kent. There was a picture of him in the news today. He's an enormous gammon. He was in the news a while ago because he wouldn't allow Asian people to
rent
his places because they left a smell of curry, he said.
Incredible.
And today he's been back in the news because now he won't let his places to single mums because the council has a policy that says if their boiler breaks down, he has to fix them within 4 days, and he thinks that's unreasonable.
Wow. Wow.
Heard of a man, literally unflushable.
Absolutely, yes. But isn't he kind of counter-suing because it's his human right to decide who lives in his house or something?
I can't remember if that's... that's right, actually. Well, that was the case back in the curry thing, yeah.
God.
He's a horrible person, though.
How do people say that stuff out loud and not think, oh, it turns out I'm an idiot?
Exactly. But then how do people vote for the UKIP,
Well...
Same thing. Anyway, let's not get down to politics. I just thought I'd share my little story and...
I appreciate it, although now I've got images of you with, very heavy trousers. Keep hitting the deck.
Yeah, they actually did make a thud sound because I had a big belt on at the time. It was just, never ever going to be that embarrassed again, hopefully.
Oh, man, it's such a good story, though. Thank you very much for going through it
for us.
Take care. Bye. I'll tell you about this thing. A shocking new seedy arrangement, this is in the Mirror, in which men are renting out their homes for free in exchange for sex, has been laid bare by journalist Amelia Boner. I'm not even joking.
Poor Amelia Boner.
Parents, think about both names together, for God's sake.
Yes. Just have a care.
Although there is a newsreader in this area, not on this radio station, that I have heard, it's called Amelia Cox, which is a similar problem. Anyway, this particular 24-year-old Liverpool Echo reporter discovered adverts offering young ladies who places to live who they could be naughty with, basically, is what they're saying. One of the men she contacted described over the phone and in graphic detail the things he wanted to do in his sex flat, despite him being married. Another man admitted he hadn't placed an ad like this before, but he had needs and that they were both single and both adults before asking if she had a boyfriend. So he assumed they were both single and both adults.
Right.
The arrangements based on sex for rent are illegal, as well as having the potential to leave vulnerable women in an incredibly tenuous living situation. It's against the law. I think for some people, it opens up possibilities that they couldn't go for otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an arrangement that's as old as the hills.
Yeah.
But the new fangled slant here is that they're advertising and just kind of laying their cards on the table.
Amelia contacted two men offering a flat in exchange for sex, and here's what happened. I would like a young lady who's living in the flat. She doesn't pay me any rent, but a couple of times a week we meet and we F like crazy, okay? I'm speaking to Dave. He's never met me, has no idea who I am, but he's just offered me a place to live in exchange for sex.
Huh.
Wow.
I was reading something earlier this week about someone who wanted virgins without tattoos. Is that part of this thing,
or no,
is
that something else?
I really didn't know I was going to be doing the show. I would have done a little bit more research, but anyway, I was sort of thinking I'm at least I'm halfway there. because I don't have any tattoos. But yeah, I don't know if that was tied into some sort of rental agreement.
But I've heard about these agreements. I mean, admittedly, it's Craigslist in America. I've heard that you can get all kinds of agreements settled on there.
Oh, yeah. On Craigslist, and there was something a couple of years ago where it was a man just looking for kind of a portable sex slave to travel with him in his Winnebago and just kind of be on call. Booty on call as he roamed the highways and the byways in his recreational vehicle.
Like a Girl Friday, but...
Yeah, but...
Even less clothes.
Less clothes and more days of the week.
Let's talk to Jerry. Hiya, Jerry.
Hi. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good to hear from you.
Okay.
Hi.
I can see you on telly. Wave. Hello, I can see you on telly. Very sorry. Hello.
What's you going still, on, Jerry?
I don't know. I got locked out once. The electric box outside.
Yeah.
It tripped out me. There's a bit of delay on. Just waving at me now. And they got the electric box outside. Electric tripped out. I went outside and just my pants. And there's been please, oh shit, oh shit, left hand side of my pants. Had to wish cuss. Maybe to use the telephone box. Just as a police photo, she went back. And the first thing in me, in my underpants, and in the middle of the room.
Right, so you get locked out in your underpants, and you're telling me that was an accident?
No, I had to go across the room. Just as a bus come, don't let your bus come. It's dark, and the bus. It's going to show me pants.
It's incredible. Well, thanks for that delightful image, Jerry.
It's seared on my frontal lobe.
Jerry, obviously, and Matt before him are both living in Confessions of a Window Cleaner, and it would appear that these things are more common than we realise. I don't think I've ever been locked out of my pants.
I haven't, but... thinking about embarrassing and compromising things that have happened to me against my will, I do recall as a young lady strolling along the Esplanade in Camden Market and tripping on a cobblestone in my, I believe I was wearing brothel creepers, which were all the rage. And so, of course, I'm wearing these Frankenstein monsters type shoes that don't flex on the cobblestones. And I tripped and I did a flying sort of Superman glide through the air.
Graceful.
With my hands out in front of me. And my hands were... out in front of me to protect my head, but in fact, they found their way right in the crack of an elderly man who was walking ahead of me.
And there is an image to conjure with. 03444991000, you're listening to Talk Radio.
Experience the unconventional, the unpredictable, and the completely unorthodox. The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
Coming up, creepy landlords, ghostly pianists. And an excessively tattooed man that you've just found.
Yes.
But also Nigel, Michael and James. I'll let you pick.
That sounds like a folk song from the 60s, Nigel, Michael and James. Let's just go with Nigel.
All right. Here's Nigel. Hey, Nigel.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Now, how are you doing? How's your mum?
She's still in a bit of pain. She's still seeing the physiotherapist, so... It's just a long haul. It's going to take a few more weeks, I think, to get her onto her feet. But she's doing. She looks fine and healthy.
Hey, that's really good news, because she was in a really bad way, wasn't she?
Well, she still is in quite a lot of pain. They have to keep giving her painkillers all the time, but I try not to worry about it.
No.
I rung her up a little while ago, and she was talking. She was fine. She wasn't too bad.
Oh, and how are you? So, are you eating properly and all that?
Pardon?
Are you eating properly?
Eating properly. Of course, yeah, I cooked myself a meal earlier. I'm doing fine.
You're not just eating beans and eating crisps?
No, I'm eating properly.
Good.
I'm eating better, actually, because I've got more time to cook for myself.
Good.
Anyway, can I say hi to someone, a new friend on Facebook?
Is it Miley Cyrus?
No. This is a friend that works in the cafe where I sing in Royal Tunbridge Wells. So, Alex Galpin. So, hi to Alex Galpin. He wanted a shout out.
Big up yourself.
And and a girlfriend called Bob. A girlfriend called Bob that I have as well. They're both my friends. Anyway, so I've got another gig tomorrow.
Yeah.
In Tunbridge Wells, at the same place. They want me to sing again, and hopefully it'll be a nice sunny day, not like today.
What kind of set have you picked out?
Well, I do Sinatra songs and classical and pop mixture, really.
Nice.
Mm. Yeah, they all enjoy it, but so it's fine. I'm looking forward to going.
How do you know they enjoy it, Nigel?
Well, because I sing for an hour, and they ask me back for another gig, so they wouldn't ask me back if they didn't like it, would they?
You're right, that's a telltale sign, isn't it?
They came up to me and said, good singing, different people, so that's good, isn't it?
And did they give you any money?
Well, I don't like to talk about money. It's private, isn't it, Rick? Well,
just cough once for yes and twice for no.
I don't ask them. I'm doing it because I enjoy it for pleasure at the moment, because I'm a drummer, actually. You know, I'm a drummer.
Yeah, by trade, yeah.
Drummer by trade. But I like to do singing because I enjoy it.
Oh, good for you.
I've got a song for you tonight because I think they're listening. I asked them to listen on the internet, my friends. They're probably listening now.
All right, well, which hit are you going to burst forth with?
Carrie Fergus, which I like singing, to Charlotte Church.
God, yeah. Okay.
I just sort of harmonise with her. I've got my new karaoke machine here, delivered from Argos. Hey, where's Ian tonight, by the way?
He's having a night off and a lie-in.
Is he well?
Yeah, he's all right.
He's all right.
He's all right. It'll be better for some proper sleep.
Right. Too many late nights.
Oh, gosh, so many, Nigel. You know what it's like.
Well, I know what it's like because I'm up till 4 in the morning on the internet talking to people like Miley Cyrus.
Okay. So
anyway, I pushed the button in.
It sounds like we've got a show coming up. I can't wait to hear it. It's
here we go. This
Nigel
is Carrie Fergus
and a recording of Charlotte Church.
This time I've got the landline, which is much clearer, so I just hold the phone near.
It's here we go, so good,
Catherine.
Nigel.
Enjoy, Catherine.
I'll try.
Don't say that, because I worry. Here we go.
Big long intro.
It's majestic, is what it is.
That's what I call foreplay.
I wish I was in Carrie Fergus, where the castles look out to sea.
I like the echo. It's gorgeous.
I would swim over the deepest ocean for my true love who waits for me. But the sea is wide and I cannot swim over, nor have I the wings to fly.
Lavish, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of, you know, improvising there, duetting.
Oh, yeah. I wish I was in the land of ever, where the mountains look out to sea. Nor have I we'll be together. My love and I, to be together. My love and I.
Could have walked to Carrickfergus.
I feel like I am in Carrickfergus.
I wish you were too.
I really
to be together, my love and I.
You're certainly giving Charlotte Church a run for her money.
I'm sorry, I've got a sore throat.
Well, I thought you were sounding in fine voice.
You sounded creamy smooth.
My throat's gone. Sometimes that happens.
Where is Carrickfergus, Nigel?
Pardon?
Where is Carrickfergus?
I think it's in... Oh, blimey. I think it must be in Ireland. It looks like Ireland, the photos I've seen.
Oh, all right.
You're not sure? You don't know?
Oh, I think
I think it's in Ireland.
It's in Ireland.
Yeah.
So I like how you were...
It's an Irish song, isn't it?
Yeah, I like how you were doing the kind of duetting, like taking turns with Charlotte Church.
Oh, yeah.
Whereabouts are you talking from in America at the moment?
She's talking from just the seat next to me.
Oh, but you're American. Sometimes you talk from America, don't you?
Nope, I'm always here.
Oh, you're always in the studio.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed your name.
I'm Katie Puckrick.
Oh, you're the singer that went to the show in London.
Ian's show. I did, but I'm not a singer. I have been known to sing.
Oh, that's right.
But
yeah,
I'm not popularly appreciated.
You're talking a lot on there, that's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of talking involved, for sure.
I've listened to half of the recording on YouTube. I haven't listened to it all because of the credit, obviously. But I will listen to it. You don't play the guitar then, Katie?
No, not since I was 13.
Oh, you should start up again.
I know, I should, shouldn't I?
You should, what are you thinking?
I've been slack. So there's something about the combination of your looping mellow vibrato and the kind of dolorous nature of that song is very melancholic. I feel a little lonely and sad right now.
Mm. It's really written for Charlotte Church. It's not really, I don't think it's a man's song.
I think it's a man's song. Brian Ferry did a great job with it.
She's singing about a boyfriend rowing her across the sea, which...
I think it's just a love interest across the...
It's a love song, but it says...
A love interest could be a boy or a girl. I think you're okay gender-wise. Yeah, the more the merrier.
Anyway, okay, Katie and Catherine.
Okay.
I don't know what else to say.
Is that the end of Nigel time?
As my throat's sore, I can't do another song. I wish I could, but if I lose it now, I won't be able to sing tomorrow.
No, you can't kill the goose that laid the golden egg.
I need to save my throat for tomorrow.
Protect your tool.
Yes.
Yeah, and keep drinking.
Careful now.
Now drinking, water for my throat.
Of course.
All right.
Night, Nigel.
Okay, thanks, Catherine.
Bye.
Toodaloo.
Bye. Aw, Nigel. He's missing his mom.
I feel sad, though. That song made me feel sad.
I wish I was.
Just the kind of... I used to live in L.A., and there was a famous Thai restaurant that had a Thai Elvis. And he was just like Elvis, except...
Thai.
Just very tiny, probably about, 5'1". Wore the whole white jumpsuit thing.
Did he have a funny name?
He just was known as Thai Elvis. But the thing was, he really looked like the Filipino Yoko Ono. He just looked like a small Asian woman with aviator shades. He had a very feminized look about him, but he was a man. But he had a delivery, that kind of echoey delivery, somewhat like Nigel.
Oh.
That put me in mind of that.
Well, what a delightful memory.
Yeah. He kind of coughed that one up for me, a little bit like a furball.
Well, yeah. I like the names that the Elvis impersonators give themselves.
Oh, like
Elvis Herselvis. Have you heard that one?
No, I've
a
heard
a female Elvis.
Oh, okay.
Elvis Herselvis.
Oh, I like it. Oh,
I know the Jewish Elvis, Elvis Schmelvis.
Elvis Schmelvis. I know about Elvez, the Mexican Elvis.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
My sister had an Elvis impersonator at her wedding, at the reception, and he came on and did a turn and was quite seriously sexually harassed by my mother. But no one can say he wasn't asking for it the way he was dancing in those tight trousers. Hello, James.
Oh, good evening. In the words of Manson, I can only disappoint you.
I can't sing,
and my trousers are stayed up all day as well.
Outrageous. Have you got a belt on or something? Some such...
I'm a square. I'm so sorry.
What did you ring us for, James? And I know you've been on for a while, so apologies for that.
No worries. I'm so busy on a Friday night. I just love the idea of carbon dating people by their tattoo.
Yeah, that was good.
You can.
Yeah, I thought that was, Kath, that was a really good idea.
It's the new art history.
Yes.
Totally. Do you remember the one, I think it was about the same time that The Matrix came out, so late 90s, was it? Every man who had sort of decent-sized biceps would have, obviously, they were the Keanu Reeves long coat and the sunglasses, and then on his forearm, a barcode.
Oh. Now, someone sent me a message earlier on saying they had a friend who had his national insurance number. That seems a little bit more practical than sexy, though.
That's quite sweet. I like that. That's really cute.
Yeah. A barcode.
I know, that's a little bit like, you know, something out of The Prisoner. I'm not a number. I'm a free man.
A free man. Yeah.
Although, you know, it does, there is a constant problem with me whenever I change jobs or go somewhere and I've tidied up. I can never find out, I never remember what my national insurance number is. Maybe I'm thinking about this all wrong. Have you ever been tempted to get inked?
I haven't. I'm like you. I decide on one, and then like as soon as the needle went on, I don't like that one. No, I've had a better idea. I can't commit.
No. Apparently, it's very Moorish. I have a friend who started out with one, and he's ended up virtually covered.
You know the worst one, though. The worst tattoo is the barbed wire or the Celtic band.
Boom.
That goes around the arm, but it goes around the arm and then stops.
Oh, yeah, so it doesn't meet up at the underneath.
I hate that. Yeah, I just got to finish. Don't leave a gap, for goodness sake.
Is that because the skin is too soft or it hurts too much? I don't know.
I didn't know about that. So if you follow it all the way around, it doesn't actually connect. I mean, that just sounds like a jip right there.
It's triggering my OCD. It's make it meet up, for goodness sake.
Mm. No, I know exactly what you mean. If you're going to do something, do the whole thing, for God's sake.
Totally, totally. By the way, Katie, I loved hearing about Elvez for the first time in years on the radio.
Oh, yes.
Elvez is brilliant.
Are you familiar with the fine work of Elvez?
Totally am. Yeah. Have you heard his version of Feliz Navidad?
Oh, of course. Yes.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very moving. Very moving.
So totally. His shtick is what he sings with a Mexican accent or in a Mexican style? Or?
Yeah, he kind of spices, you know, gives it a spicy tamale kind of thrust.
He sounds like a good time.
Yeah, he is.
By the way, I'm absurdly excited to be talking to, well, Kath, obviously, but Katie as well.
It's wow.
So cool to talk to you.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
you told 20 years ago, I think it was, a long time ago, and this has stuck with me for some reason. You told one of my favourite stories ever on the radio about being at a garden party and being a bit bored.
Oh?
Do you remember this?
You have to tell me more.
It was, I think you were on another station at the time, and you said about how you were at a garden party, sat on the grass, lovely warm summer evening.
Uh-oh.
And a couple sat down to chat to you.
Yes.
And they weren't particularly interesting. So as you were kind of nodding and smiling and listening to their story, you kind of were fumbling around for something to do.
Uh-oh. I know what the story is.
On the ground.
Yes, I picked up something from the ground to just like casually toy with it.
Yep.
And it was a dried dog turd. And I was casually just like, you know, just sort of, you know, idling and...
Twiddling it.
And then as it warmed in the palm of my hand,
that is outrageous.
I reactivated the stench.
It was a trick turd, though. It was posing as a stick.
No, that's so funny. How weird that... the nonsense I come out with. And you know what? It's funny because that was the first time I met a man who then became my boyfriend for the next 7 years. So that was a very auspicious desiccated dog turd.
You know, the weirdest thing, I can't remember my children's birthdays half the time, but that story has stayed in my mind for 20 years.
That is so funny. I'm strangely flattered that you remembered that.
My pleasure.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, James, for introducing that charming image.
Oh, God.
It's a lovely, lovely one, isn't it?
Thanks, Brave
one. I really am very consistent with the horrible stuff that I talk about. I really do have to get more of an adult sense of humor.
I think you've just launched a new phone in, though. What have you twiddled with out of nervousness?
Yeah, it was a nervous twiddle and it didn't end well.
0344 499 1000.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. You never know just where the conversation will take you on Talk Radio.
We were just talking in the break there about how we're both Team Yoko, it turns
yeah,
out.
Yeah, Team Yoko. Yoko Ono, she's good news. She does get a bad rap because it just so happened that she and John Lennon got together when the Beatles were imploding. Mm-hmm. And so people put two and two together and got five for no reason.
And also, it's a tradition, isn't it, to blame the woman?
Blame the woman. And, I mean, the thing was, I've been actually doing a lot of reading about John Lennon recently and listening to some documentaries and things. And the reason why I think it made such an impact and people were likely to blame her was at that time in the late 60s, it wasn't really a done thing that male artists of the stature of John Lennon would be on a par and consider an equal their woman.
Yeah.
And the fact that she was an established fine artist and they came together at the peak of both of their careers at that time. And he was a very liberated man for the late 60s. So I think that got people, got their dander up.
Do you think there was a bit of racism in there as well?
Certainly because...
Post-war?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's just, I think, just more fear of the other. So, like, it's bad enough that she's a woman that he's taking seriously as an artist and doing things like bringing her into, you know, group to band recording sessions and things. And he's on record as saying, well, you know I probably would look askance if, you know, if the other guys were bringing in their girlfriends and wanting them to join in. But, the thing was I was completely open, you know, open to trying something new. And the band was already hitting a lot of problems for other different reasons, you know, just kind of feeling frustrated creatively and just winding each other up from spending too much time together.
Have you seen Let It Be? Have you seen the whole thing?
I haven't seen the whole thing. No,
I did feel for Paul in that. Because he's clearly right. He's being painted as the bossy one. But
he's trying to hold it together.
He's trying to hold it together, yeah. And they're all flaking.
Well, John did. I have this book called the. It's actually just a transcription of the very last interview that John and Yoko ever gave to a BBC One radio DJ, whose name eludes me right now. But anyway, they literally gave this interview a few days before he got shot. And they're talking all about his career and the way John and Yoko spoke, the way they interjected, the way they finished each other's sentences. It's so clear that they're such a powerhouse couple and they have so much respect for each other. And he did talk about the fact that, oh, yeah, I got to hand it to Paul McCartney. He had a hard time. He was really trying to hold us together. Yeah. And everybody was so unhappy.
What I thought was interesting as well, I know that Linda McCartney got flack for being in Wings, not being a proper musician, all that stuff.
Well, Paul wanted her to be in Wings.
That's it.
He wanted to, they made a vow to each other and they made a decision they weren't going to spend more than 2 weeks apart. Yeah. And interesting.
But that wasn't so very different a dynamic from John and Yoko, and yet Yoko's the bad guy.
Yeah, well, it's only because she came in to the picture at a time when they were still the Beatles. The Beatles still existed. And as a sideline, I always stick up for Linda McCartney's vocal work, because as kind of haphazarded and naive as it is, and kind of girlish and tuneless, one might say, it also is a distinctive sound in the mix. It's like it's an instrument in the mix. It's that kind of naive sing-along sound that you associate with Wings. It's part of, it's like a little bit of the imperfection, so that it makes the whole, the finished whole seem more approachable.
I also, I'm romantic fool as I am, I love the idea that he's got his, you know, he's got his wife there, the person he loves most in the world. They're making something together.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's great. And I mean, those first albums that they did together are so fantastic. The, well, the first one, before it was Wings, it was Paul and Linda McCartney, and it stands up with any kind of homespun lo-fi indie West Coast finery, like any kind of Elliott Smith, that first album.
Ah, those guys.
Those guys.
Wonder what would have happened if she'd have, well, they'd have stayed married. I think they would
have. Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, for sure.
Let's have a quick word with Michael because he's been hanging on for ages. Oh, hello, yeah. Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Oh, hello.
Hello. You're on.
Hi. Oh, sorry. I'm sucking a mint. I'll get rid of it. Hang on.
That's all right. No, carry on. It's fine. What kind of mint is it? Is it Murray or Polo?
It's a tree-ball-like type of mint. It's like a strong mint, but quite big.
You're not playing games, Michael.
Yeah, you're not playing around.
No, it's a mint. Anyway, look.
Don't get too excited. It's a mint cap.
I'm Cecily Stute in County Durham. And who's the guest with you tonight, Catherine?
My co-presenter tonight is Katie Puckrick.
Hello.
Hello, Katie.
Hello.
And this is Michael.
Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Hiya. I'm just ringing up, right, because somebody came on earlier, they were talking about internet dating and everything like that.
Oh, yeah, Alan.
I met somebody online back in March, early March, and we've been getting on really well. And here's the problem I've got. I've got two daughters, they're twins, and they're like 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I went out with a meal with the new girlfriend with the two daughters. They just took the mickey out of her all night. So we were laughing and giggling and snorting and making silly comments about her. And I'm not being like, oh, I don't know. I mean, she's not like slim. She's quite chunky, you know what I mean? And we're just saying, we'll have to hire JCB to get you back home instead of a taxi because you're that big. And they're both like saying horrible things to her all the time, you know? And it was really like, I was really angry about it, but I didn't want to say anything. But my daughter phoned us up and she says, what are you doing with that? I was, excuse me, what do you mean? She says, why are you dating someone that's as fat as anything? You know what I mean, Catherine? And I think it's caused a bit of a problem because my daughters said they don't want her coming anywhere because they're like, you know, when they have open days at school and everything. They don't want, said, do not bring her near our school or anything like that.
I feel like they weren't really ready to accept her, whatever she'd have looked like. What's your relationship like with your ex?
Can he? Well, we'll get on quite well. I mean, obviously, I have my daughters that come over, they stay with us on the weekend and everything else, but obviously they live with the mother.
Yeah.
And I just thought it would be a good idea to introduce my new girlfriend to the daughters, and obviously they've just done nothing but, like, poke fun at that.
Do you think they think that maybe you'll get back together with the mum? Are they holding out hope for that?
Oh, no, we've been apart for quite a long time. And that's what we thought. I said, you are desperate to go out with someone like that. How did you meet her? And I said, well, on an internet dating site. And I said, exactly what, you know what I mean? Why are you dating someone like that? Or why can't you not pick someone like my mother? You know what I mean?
That's what it is.
So, they just want mum part two.
They're not good. But even if she was like the mother, she'd be too like the mother. They're not ready to accept anyone, it sounds like. But, you know, in the meantime, you've got your life to live. And if she's making you happy, you're going to have to sort this out, Michael.
We get on brilliantly. We've got a lot of things in common. We've been ice skating. We've been on a ghost hunt together.
Wow.
We've been, like, you know, going to bowling alleys and doing stuff like that. We've been on a trip. I live in Chesterley Street in County Durham, which is not too far away from York. So we've been to York on this train and everything. And it's fun days. We just get on really well. But the daughters just say, you know, you do not bring her anywhere near our school. She's, We their friends will take a mick because she's quite large, this person I'm dating, and that. You know, but she's all, and in my eyes, I've got nothing against her at all. Do you know what I mean? I obviously care about her and everything.
Have you told them that?
And it,
or do you just let it go?
I said to the daughters, I said, look, I said, I don't make comments who you hang out with, so you shouldn't really say stuff about the person I'm with. I mean, she's dead canny, do you know what I mean? She does anything for them, you know what I mean? She's really open to them and try to befriend them and everything, and they're just totally ignored her all night and they're just making silly comments because she had a jelly and ice cream afterwards because we're not on Monday night together, they all were.
Mm.
And she had like jelly and ice cream and they were just like laughing and like giggling and whispering about that. Do you know what I mean? I think she could tell they were like taking the mick out of her, but she didn't want to
say. I was going to say, was she all right?
Well, she sent me a text message. That obviously she's working the night, so she's like on nights and that, because she does work on a night, does night stuff and that, you know. And she's basically said, your kids don't like us and that, and how we're going to like progress if they don't get on with this. And I kind of said what you said. You're new to them. They're obviously not used to you. You know, obviously they've got the mother who they're close to and everything. And
this is why I think maybe you bring out the big. Maybe it's time to bring out the big guns. Do you think your ex would help you with this? Because she needs to set them straight, doesn't she?
Do you know what? I've never actually thought of that. You know, I've never thought about telling her, you know, about the situation and everything. Because obviously she's not bothered. She's probably glad I've got somebody. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? So
exactly. And has she got someone?
Well, she was dating. She's been dating off and on different people, like somebody from work and that, but hasn't worked out.
She'll understand where you're coming from, because sooner or later she's going to meet someone, and you know, she's not picking someone for the girl. She's picking someone essentially for her. And if you get on with the girls, that's so much the better. Yeah. But the
thing is, my daughters are that funny age. They're like 14-year-old. The two of them are twins. Like, so I mean, and they're just like saying, "Why can't I not pick somebody like?" You know, more that we could like accept and that instead of her. She's like, you know, they've been saying some horrific things about her weight and everything.
Yeah, I think I think your ex might be the secret weapon in this, you know.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, Katie?
That's probably a good idea. Do you know,
I think it's a good idea.
About contacting and telling her about what's been going on, because obviously I was trying to keep things together on Monday night, and the two lasses were just taking the mick all night, like laughing and sniggering and giggling and making shit.
I think in some way they feel like they're being loyal to their mother in this, but if she sets them straight, it might put a bit more more strength in what you're trying to say to them.
Mm-hmm. That is a brilliant idea, Catherine. I really appreciate that. I want to, you know, tell the mum what's going on, really, and just see what she says.
I think she'd be helpful, and it's good that you've got that relationship with her, that she can join forces on this, because, you know, it's going to help her in the long run. She's going to pick someone that they might not. He's not going to be flipping, you know. Justin Bieber, is he? He's going to be a bloke.
Yeah. I hope it's not Justin Bieber. That would be weird.
It would be interesting to find out if anybody else has had problems with kids when you've been on dates and you've met somebody. It would be interesting if anyone could ring up and see what experience they've had with their children accepting somebody new in their lives and their, you know, parents' life and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you reckon? I'm getting people on YouTube, which of course is the bravest medium, because they're not actually sticking their necks out and talking to us now, saying, you know, you should have told them off, it's rude, blah, blah, blah. You know, I remember being 14, you're not your most rational.
No.
And if there's two of you as well against a stranger who's coming in between you and your dad, I can understand why it gets nasty.
Yeah, there's jealousy and there's insecurity at play.
And this loyalty to their mum.
Yeah, and it's like a power struggle as well. And it is kind of a pack mentality. It's, you know, the weak link is the new person. So they're kind of...
And there's an obvious weakness as far as they're concerned.
Yeah. So,
and that she's not as perfect. I mean, if she was... Tell you what, if she was Kim Kardashian, they would be suspicious of her. They would find fault. Mm-hmm. Because
they would, wouldn't they?
Of course they would. It's not really about that.
If you don't give her a chance, I say she's dead canny, right? She'll do anything for anybody. She's got the loveliest soul in the world and everything. And they're just judging on her looks. So, I mean, to be honest with you, it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Get your ex on side and let me know how you get on.
I'd
be really intrigued to find out. But also, you know, if you're listening to this and it's happened to you, words of wisdom would be gratefully accepted. 03444991000. But yeah, Michael, I feel your pain and good on you for sticking with it. You know, do you feel like you said enough to set them straight? Do you feel like your girlfriend felt like you defended her?
Well, I said to them, I said, you shouldn't treat people like that. I said, you know, you don't even know her. You know, that you've only just met her and stuff. And I thought, I was trying to make, like, tell the two daughters, I tell them, you know, what they're doing at school, and they weren't even interested. We're playing on the phone and that. And I thought that was a bit, like, rude and everything. And they were just, like, pointing and that and laughing. And when, you know what I mean, when she had some, like, jelly and ice cream, that they were just, like, just sat there and just laughed, right, through it all. And I just thought then, you've made me look bad because I tried, you know what I mean? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
The way they went on, I was embarrassed myself with them, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you need to say it to them, you know, gently, because they are kids. You know, I know that they probably look like young women at 14, but they are kids, and it's a weird new thing for them, I imagine. They've not seen you with anyone else yet, have they?
Nah.
Well, then.
Yeah.
Lasses are rich, judge people don't know on everything. Yeah, like, I mean, as well.
Yeah, of course they do. And they can, and at the moment, they're trying to find some reason for this feeling of discomfort they've got, you know, and they're not mature enough to realise that's what's going on. And, you know, and also there's an element of egging each other on, probably.
I like saying, like, when I said, we're going to, obviously, we had a couple of glasses, had a couple of glasses of wine and that and stuff. So obviously, we'll get the taxi back and they were saying, you better phone for a JCB instead of a car, and like laughing and being silly and that. And I mean, and I just thought, hopefully she might understand it, just two daft school lasses being silly, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of your responsibility to make sure that you protect her as well from that, because no one has to put up with that. And, you know, and if you're going to have a long-term relationship with her, they'd need to show more respect than that.
Aye, exactly. I mean, the other thing, you know, one of them was saying, you're not going to move in, were you? And I said, I'm not going to say anything because I don't know what's going to happen just yet.
This is what they're worried about.
I've only been saying that since, like, early March. So
this is what they're worried about. All the things you're saying, they're threatened by it. So I think the double-pronged approach with the ex is the way forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They need reassuring.
Thank you very much for your help anyway. Thanks.
No problem. I might not be right. It's just an idea. But let me know, as I say, how you get on. All right. Good luck, Michael.
Oh, well, do. Thank you very much for having us on. Thanks.
Hey, no problem. It's been a pleasure. 03444991000. Like I say, if you've got experience of that, because I haven't.
And yeah, I don't know. I don't know my way around some pack of wild teenage girls.
And
they're terrifying.
Intimidating, aren't they?
Yes.
With their gorgeous figures and
poreless skin.
God, I can kind of understand why Snow White's stepmother had the problem, you know what I mean? Hello, Mark.
Hello, Catherine. You look nice.
Thanks.
That was a comedy thing. It was off that programme, Friday Night Dinner. You might not know.
Oh, God, that flipping neighbour. I like that programme.
Yeah,
the neighbour is...
He's the best actor in the world, man.
Do you like him? I think he spoils it.
What? Do you really?
Yeah. I like
He's on Spaced, weren't he, though?
Yeah.
I like him on that, neither.
Well, I just don't like that character. I think it's daft. I like Friday Night Dinner. I like that family. I like the mum and dad, and how the dad's always
boiling.
And it's
him that spoils it for you.
Yeah. But...
Really?
Yeah.
I think he's the best thing, isn't it?
Well, look, maybe he's been put there for you.
Yeah, beg to differ, isn't it?
Exactly, if you enjoy it.
Anyway, have you two been to the same shop for your tops? Because you're proper flexing the same tops, man.
Yeah, I just noticed that myself, that we're both in black.
Hello, Katie, you look nice.
Oh. It's more creepy the second time around.
What is that?
No, it is.
But Catherine has, if you do a little twirl, you have a lovely keyhole cutout in the back of your
address. Right, we don't
address.
Want to know that business, do
no.
we?
And I'm wearing a jumpsuit. I'm wearing a jumpsuit. And you're in separates, I believe.
No, I'm in a full-length gown.
An evening gown. Like the 1980s.
Oh, God, Mark, are you all right? Is Babe Station closed or something?
Why? What's up with that? I'm just chatting away, and I've not got any topic to talk about.
It's just what are you wearing?
You're wearing a jumpsuit, and I just say it's like 1980s.
I have no rejoinder for that.
Me neither. I really have no idea what to do with it.
You was going to let your clobber.
Oh, God.
And so, do you have any tattoos? We were talking about unnecessary tattoos.
I have one tattoo that I did in 19... When was it? I was 30. I got... Do you know the Hindu symbol, the Om.
Okay.
The Hindu symbol, the Om.
Yeah.
Yep. Do you say everything twice?
I thought you couldn't hear me because it was echoing, man.
Oh, okay.
So you've got the Hindu symbol, the Om.
That's it.
Where is your Om, if I dare ask?
Where's my arm? It's
Om.
It's my body. Oh, it's off my arm, on my right arm.
Okay.
Your Om's on your arm.
My Om's on my arm, yeah.
That's easy to remember.
Are you a Hindu?
Oh, I might be, is it?
Okay, I think that'll do.
Oh, my goodness.
So we've had the what are you wearing call that I've been waiting for so long.
Is that something that comes every night or only sometimes?
Mark has a tendency. Hello, Bruce.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Bruce. And how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I'll try not to be quite as creepy as the last caller.
I don't think you need to try that hard.
Okay, good. I'll be honest, like, I missed the first hour. I was busy.
Living life.
I recording a podcast. Is that living life? I don't really know.
Oh, gosh, it's the most living of life.
Oh, well, then that's all I spend my life doing if I'm not working.
Good.
But But I did come into a point when you were talking about Elvis impersonators.
Right.
And I don't know if you've heard of this one, because this is quite a new one to me, but have you ever come across, either of you, come across Elvana?
No.
Okay. So I don't know if you kind of get what that name is, but Elvana is...
Nirvana.
A Nirvana tribute band with an Elvis impersonator.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I've never heard of it, but I just typed it in, and it's looking grunge-tastic.
Wow. So it's going to be...
It's amazing.
Where do we experience such a thing?
I don't know. I mean,
in person.
There's videos on YouTube. They yes. played a local indie club to. I couldn't make it, unfortunately. I was gutted. But like Essex, there's an indie club, and they were playing there about a year ago. But they just seem to kind of do like universities and colleges, like
right.
Quite small venue.
So it's only Nirvana material, but done Elvis styly.
Yeah.
Jumpsuit Elvis styly.
Wow. Full yeah. cheeseburger Vegas.
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds like an experience.
And karate moves.
I think I'd prefer that to actual Nirvana. Wouldn't you?
It's an interesting twist. It's definitely an interesting twist.
I like yeah. it. I'm going to do some research into that. Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah.
No problem.
Good
at all.
One. Adding quality.
So what's your podcast? Do you want to give it a plug?
I've got, I do a Disney podcast. That's what I was doing tonight.
Disney.
A Disney podcast for adults. Yeah.
Oh.
So what yeah. aspect of Disney do you like? Is it the animation, or is it just the whole world, like Disneyland? Because I know there's Disneyland nuts out there.
Yeah. It kind of started out, I suppose, as theme parks, but we do kind of talk about everything. Mm. And at the moment, actually, I'm focused on working with some people about disabilities in the parks.
Mm.
Because there was an incident a few weeks ago at Disneyland in Paris where somebody had an epileptic fit, and it took 15 minutes for them to get any first aid tour.
Oh, no.
And if they didn't have, if she didn't have somebody with her that knew what to do, it could have potentially been catastrophic.
Oh, my God.
She's okay and she's fine, but the... Disney, I've got to say, like, Disney as a company and their theme parks are very good with disabled people, but that particular night they weren't doing things in the way that they normally did, and this kind of led to it. So I'm doing a lot of work with people at the moment in that community to try and get them to rethink their strategy, look at trying to deal with disabilities a bit better.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's become a bit of a passion project. So this started off 6 years ago as just Disney, but as things do, as your own podcasts do as well, they evolve, they change. And so that's what we're doing at the moment, is kind of looking at disability. So we've actually, I think we're going to have a call next week with some people there to try and discuss it a bit further. So it looks like wheels in motion. Hopefully some positive changes will be forthcoming, but... That's a very long tangent. Sorry, Katie.
No. Brilliant.
And you've quite really gone off on it.
No, but what I like is that you've seen that there's a problem and you have taken responsibility for it. You didn't need to do that. You've become a sort of a campaigning force.
Yeah, you're a catalyst for change.
Well, the thing is, like, and I've spoken to Catherine before about this, my son's autistic, and we've not gone to the theme parks since he's had a diagnosis, but when my wife last took him, because he's nonverbal, he's only 3.5, so he doesn't really kind of get the idea of queuing or anything like that, so yeah. It's very hard. But the thing that I find a real problem with, not with Disney actually, but is with some of the guests, because when people, if you're disabled, you get access to things, you don't have to queue for as long, that kind of thing. But what you get is, if you don't look like you're disabled...
Boom. Invisible disabilities. Yeah, so people take it upon themselves to point out the fact that there's nothing wrong with you.
Absolutely. And so my fear at the moment is, well, maybe it's go back with, my wife and kids next year, we're planning to go. I'm already dreading what that's going to be like, because I'm waiting for the first person to turn around and say, why are you jumping in front?
Oh, man.
There's nothing wrong with him. Because it does happen, and, you know... The more I've kind of gone down this rabbit hole with these people and heard their stories, it's kind of really kind of ignited the passion in me, because I don't have it as bad as some people do, and it's more for my son that I'm doing it, but there's been some horrendous treatment by people, and it's a shame we live in a world where people are judging.
Yeah.
But, they just are, aren't they?
But then to give people credit or to have empathy from the other point of view, people will be educated. Like, if you do just quietly say, well, my son is autistic, do you find that they back down and understand and apologize?
Luckily, we've not had too much of that.
Okay, that's good.
So far. But even like the other day, my wife came home in tears because my son's at nursery, and when she went and picked him up, they said, your son was involved in a violent incident today.
Uh-huh.
And he'd hit one of the other children. Now, when the other teacher turned around and actually kind of expanded on what happened, my son, as one of his autistic traits, he kind of flaps his arms around.
Right. Mm.
And so he taught this girl. There wasn't any kind of denial, but to me, a violent incident is you going and doing something purposely.
Mm. Yeah, maliciously.
He just managed to catch this girl. I don't know if she walked into him or she was just near him when he was waving his arms, but that's what happened. Sometimes it's the terminology. You expect schools, especially, to kind of be better at that. The other teacher had apologised once it was said, but at that point the damage had kind of been done.
Yeah.
You know, wife hears he's been violent, and so I've then got to try and, you know, help her understand that, you know, sometimes people do say things they don't mean, and
yeah,
it's hard. It's a very hard world, and. What is nice is that because of being forced into this world, because of having someone that's got autism and learning about it, it does open your eyes up to the world around you and how unfair things can be for people and how you see people. And I'm a lot more compassionate. You know, very openly, so I'm a lot more compassionate now than I was 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you've actually
human nature.
Yeah, you've learned from your son. You've seen the world through his eyes, and it's broadened it for both of you.
He's teaching you. Yeah. Oh, bless you. Well, give us the name of your podcast so we can give it a good old airing.
Thank you very much. Diz After Dark is the podcast.
Diz
and
After Dark.
The actual Twitter that we're doing at the moment is Disabled@Diz. And that's where, so if anyone wants to share stories, wants to help us out, when it's not crowdfunding or money, it's just purely support, then feel free to give us a mention.
Wonderful. Diz After Dark. Thanks very much, Bruce. Real pleasure to speak to you.
You too. Take care, ladies.
Phone us again, won't
All
you?
Right.
Bye-bye now. 03444991000. I mean, what a thing.
Yeah.
And to take control of it like that.
Yeah. No, it's great. And also, it's just... he's on the inside and he can see that there's probably some pretty simple fixes.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be easy for him to shrug his shoulders and leave it to someone else, but he's not doing it. What a great thing. 03444991000. Erin and George, we'll be right with you after this.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. Speech Radio with a difference. Talk Radio.
You can give us a ring, 03444991000, or you can tweet at Talk Radio or at Flippin' Kath or at Katie Puckrick.
Yeah.
Or you can text us. You could just got to put talk at the beginning of your message. 87222 is the number, and that'll cost you 25p per message on top of your standard network rate. Let's go to the phones. Erin, hello. There she is.
Hi, Kath. Hey. Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you both?
Pretty good.
All the better for hearing from you. What's going on?
Just a quick one. I've not got much, but like, I just wanted to give a shout out to something, one of my new favourite things at the moment, and just to say how much I'm really enjoying the TV show with Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse.
It's so good. Have you been watching it?
I haven't. I've missed out on it. So what is it? They're fishing? What are they doing?
It is, but it's not really a fishing show, is it?
It's a relationship show.
Yeah, it's a buddy thing.
It's like more than that.
Yeah. It's two guys. I mean, they do talk about it. They're both kind of recovering from, I think one's had a heart bypass and one of them's got a stent or something that they go on about. But, you know, they're just getting to the stage in life where they're, you know, reflective.
Right. So it's past the sex, drugs and rock and roll
part
of their life.
But it's so warm and gentle and genuinely funny. You know, I've been really enjoying it, Erin. It's one of my weekend treats. I don't watch very many shows anymore. I can't commit.
Yeah, I like Bob Mortimer anyway, but it's just, it's such a, like, it's joy to watch, I think. It's like, it's so relaxed and it's just sort of...
Is it just like, it's sort of soothing to watch a show where not that much happens? So it's almost like they're just keeping you company.
It's proper slow TV.
Yeah,
right?
Proper slow TV.
And it's actually making me quite, oh, she's gone. It makes me quite fancy fishing, even though it's never really appealed to me in the past.
I had a little fishing incident before. I had a fling. I had a summer fling with a fisherman in Alaska.
Oh.
And he took me salmon fishing. That was not my favorite part of our interaction, but you know, it was certainly a cultural exchange.
Did you catch any?
I couldn't even throw the line properly. Like he had this really snazzy wrist flicky action that he did, and he kind of like flung it out sideways, kind of like in the action movies when people shoot the guns sideways, you know, and it just looks all kind of sexy and extra gangster. Well, he did that with his fishing pole, and he just kind of did flick, flick, fling, fling, and out went the line. But no, I was the kind of person that like, oh, bombs away and like fling it back behind me and it catches on my bobble hat. And yeah, it was not very convincing.
So you're the Bob Mortimer in the partnership then.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the way it is. Like Paul Whitehouse has obviously been fishing for a long time.
Right.
He knows, I think they've got a fishing expert informing them, you know, on the credits you can see that they've got like a bit of help.
They have a consultant.
Yeah, because I can never work out. I always find it very impressive, and I know that people with hobbies learn this stuff over years and years and years, but he knows, you know, which fish is going to be more receptive to which bait and which rod to use, and you know where to stand, you know, when you need waders, when you need to stand by the side, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they go to all these different places and they're catching different species of fish, and by the time they catch them you feel really pleased for them.
Oh yeah, it's a sense of accomplishment on their behalf.
Bob's victory is a true joy to behold. Oh, because he's kind of the underdog and doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's just a really delightful show in an age where everything's got super fast. Like I've put on things that I used to really enjoy for my daughters, and I see their eyes glaze over because things are so slow, you know.
Yeah, they got to have that constant stimulus.
Yeah, but actually, my weekend, you know, I like to sort of sit down, glass of red wine, watch something that just takes me out of myself for a while. And that is just, you feel like you've had a weekend away.
Right.
It's so good.
I don't know. I mean, I like how you're selling it in your lovely, creamy, soft northern tones. But I don't know if I could commit to a whole series of two middle-aged men fishing.
Try one.
All right.
Try one, all and right. I promise you, you'll love it. 0344-499-1000. Ashley Jakes on YouTube. I prefer catching mine from Iceland. And yeah, a lot of people suggesting that, yeah, that they've been enjoying it too. They throw all the fish back as well, so it's not like there's any kind of...
Yeah, but the fish have these kind of ripped up fish lips after having hooks jabbed in them.
You don't see any blood.
All right.
I think they must use rubber hooks.
Joke hooks. I'm a little distracted the whole time we've been talking about the fish because I can't stop looking at the man who's been tattooed in Russia. He's a Russian man tattooed head to toe in black.
Oh, God. Yeah, we were talking about this earlier on about tattoos and how it can become addictive. And we were saying that, you know, the tattoos have evolved and you can actually date when things were done by the tattoo of the time.
Yeah, like, it's like going through, you know, the layers of the Roman road beneath the streets of London or something.
Yeah, so now it's like getting so extreme that people are just colouring themselves in.
Yeah, so this guy in Russia, he's only 32 years old, and he has spent 12 years covering his body, including his eyeballs, with black ink since he was diagnosed with cancer. So he's just basically, he hasn't had to worry about what shape or cartoon or style or image he's going to pick for his body because he's just colored in the whole thing.
And he looks like Pete Bogman.
He does. He looks like a corpse. I mean, it's like an old cadaver that you've dug up from some bad murder spot.
So what do you reckon? Is he? You say he started doing it when he got cancer. Okay, he's so reclaiming himself.
Well, it is that idea. He didn't feel really good about his body because he felt like the skin looked kind of pasty, and also it turns out that he is what is the word? He's an albino. How did he not know that before he had cancer? Because it says here, doctors. diagnosed him with albinism. So I guess from his point of view, he just thought, oh, I'm a little pasty looking. And he didn't realize it was a whole condition. Uh-huh. But he'd already started on the tattoos. But here's the part. This is what I call a bridge too far. He had his penis and his testicles and, for additional flourish, his nipples removed because he felt like it distracted from the look.
Oh, my
God. The smooth look of this. So how do you find a legitimate doctor who's going to do that for you? Because I don't think that's I don't think that's just like such a good thing. It probably doesn't have good results medically.
I think it is rather niche.
It is a little niche.
On that bombshell, 03444991000. We'll see you in a few minutes after the news.
Experience the unconventional, the unpredictable, and the completely unorthodox. The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
It's not just me, though. We've got Katie Puckrick as well.
Yeah.
Ian's having a night off. Everything's cool. He'll be back. Of course he'll be back. But in the meantime, you've got us. 03444991000 is the number if you want to get in touch with us. And we've got Rainbow George on the line. Hey, Rainbow George.
Good morning to you both.
Hello.
Two K's and a G.
Greetings.
Greetings.
It must be almost exactly 24 hours since I was speaking to Ian.
Ah.
And I haven't been to sleep since.
Why?
I don't know. It kept me up buzzing all night. I've really been a bit disappointed with my last few conversations with Ian. I think he's fallen out of love with me.
No, not at all. I have noticed, though, you're very self-critical about stuff.
Am I? No.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I thought by now Ian was going to do 7 podcasts, and I thought we could have got the first one done by now. It would have been nice.
I don't know if you've been listening, George, but stuff has been happening.
No, I'm aware of that, but I'm just wondering if these podcasts would ever come into being, because I was really looking forward to sharing a mystical, humorous story with you. Ooh. And your followers.
Go on then.
Yeah, no. That whole
story.
That's what was going to be on the 7 podcasts. And the first one would have been conversations that were taking place this time 33 years ago and would have all been really synchronistic and nice. But it's nice to be chatting to two Ks and a G on. We've gone into the 21st of the month, and I'm into numerology, so two and one is a 3, and so we're a 3 on this 3-day. And do you know anything about tarot cards at all?
Not really.
No.
Well, a bit. I don't really hold with much of that stuff, but go on, you can convince me.
No, I'm just into the numerology of it. And then in the major arcana, there are 22 cards, and I read all sorts of meaning into the numbers. But also, each card relates to a person or the sun or the moon and that sort of thing. And number 3 relates to the Empress. And you know, I've been calling you the Enchantress, but I think maybe you should become the Empress. And Ian could be the Emperor. That's number 4. You're the Empress card is number 3. But I read a whole calendar into those 21 numbered cards and the 10 card, which is the magician, who I suppose to represent the most high God that's mentioned in the Bible, but never speaks in the Bible. There's a God that's mentioned as being the most high God, but the most high God never says anything. But it's all mystical and magical, and I would have hoped that Ian would have been tuned into it, but he doesn't seem to be tuned into it at all. Me trying to share an insight into what I'm quite sure is true, that we're all being remotely controlled by a soulmate on the other side who makes us think what we think and consequently act the way we act. Ian couldn't even consider that might be true. And I'm sure it is true.
Okay, well, you know, some people they don't feel the conviction that you do, and that's something you just got to accept. Otherwise, you're going to live a life of frustration.
No, it's just I didn't realise that Ian was so narrow-minded, if you like.
He's not here to talk about it, and I don't really feel like it's fair to be dissecting him like this.
Well, you know him much better than I know him,
still don't really want to talk to him about what your disappointments are about him.
No, it's just I'm interested what's made to go on in our minds. Yeah. I'm sure there've been occasions in your life when you said, what made me say that, or what made me do that, and we've all had that sort of experience.
I generally take responsibility for it.
Yeah, but
I don't hold it as something someone else has put in my mind.
Yeah, like someone's pulling the puppet strings.
Yeah, but you know, I think that in many ways that's probably quite a comforting thing if you really believe it. But I just can't.
Yeah, but I'm saying I'm quite certain that it's true, and it all goes back to experiences that I was made to have 42 years ago, and spent 6 years trying to write a book about it, which I never finished, and then in 1985 I was going to release 7 one-hour tapes that were going to tell the story, and that never happened either. And now my hopes rest with you and Ian and the 7 podcasts.
I think you should just work through your writer's block. I mean, it sounds like you have a message that you want to impart. I think it's up to you to tell it.
Yeah, but I'm saying I could do that easiest on podcasts, much easier than writing it. Writing became a real chore.
Yeah. Well, the intention is there to make it, and it's just a matter of circumstances preventing it at the moment.
But, yes.
But, you know, I think you've got a really interesting story.
I do.
But I just worry that you can't accept that other people don't all feel the same about it.
No. Very few people share what I suppose to be true, but I do base it on more than just personal experience. I base it on things that have been written. There's a famous limerick, I don't know if you know it, that there once was a man who said, "Damn, it is borne in on me that I am an engine that moves in predestinate grooves. I'm not even a bus, I'm a tram." That had to be written by somebody who's had similar experiences to what I've had to reveal to me that something higher controls what happens in my mind. Anyway, it's deep. And
well, deep.
Yeah, but it has humour attached, and I'm sure this mystery play, which we're all acting our predetermined parts in, has a happy ending for all of us. And just sense that our creator has a wicked sense of humour. And, I'm totally optimistic about all of our destinies.
Well, that last bit I can probably get on board with.
Good.
Take care of yourself, George. Go to bed, for heaven's sake.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 24 hours is too long to stay awake.
You reckon?
Oh, now that sounds like a challenge to George. I can see that. I can almost see the twinkle in your eye as you say that. Honestly, go to bed, George.
Yeah, so happens I have a journalist here with me who I think is going to be hopefully doing a story about that will include our radio relationship and what have you. So hopefully, hopefully.
Night-night, George.
Night-night to you.
So this brings to mind something I saw many years ago in Washington, D.C., in the Museum of American Art. It was discovered sometime around the middle of the last century, after World War II, in the middle of Washington, D.C., in an abandoned garage, a series of cardboard and tinfoil sculptures that had been created by a janitor who was seeing visions mm-hmm. over the White House and over the Washington National Monument. And he had long since died, but they found all of these works, and he had called them the throne of the third heaven of the nation's Millennium General Assembly. And here's a photograph to show you. And he created life-size altars that were all made out of cardboard, covered in gold and silver tin foil. And they were based on visions that he was seeing of the Virgin Mary hovering in the air. And he was trying to convey this vision that he felt was extremely real. And it was a message for mankind, but only he could see it. So he was trying to spread the word. And it's amazing outsider art. It's this folk art, and it fills an entire room in the Museum of American Art in Washington, D.C.
It's incredible. It's kind of almost sort of Catholic Church inspired.
So it's very Baroque, but it's almost like icicles dripping off. So it's definitely churchy looking in a very Roman Catholic church. But the fact that it's just made out of it almost looks like it would fit in with Andy Warhol's silver tinfoil factory in the late 60s. So it almost anticipates pop art, but it does look back to high religious art. Yeah. But anyway, the stuff that Rainbow George was talking about, where it seems completely evident to him, so clear, this mystical, occult, arcane, you know, the life behind our life, and the fact that he's perturbed that not everybody sees things the same way.
It seems very clear to him, and he's been talking about the same thing for years and years and years.
He needs to get it down. Like, all I'm saying is that this guy, this artist, let's find out what his name is, James. Anyway, this janitor in Washington, D.C., managed to create this beautiful work of art, James Hampton, the throne of the third heaven of the nation's Millennium General Assembly. He created it between 1950 and 1964. It's now in the Smithsonian American Art Museum. Anyway, so I'm just saying, I'm doing an art throwdown here to Rainbow George, that he could come up with his epic work that could explain it to all of us once and for all.
Yeah. The thing is about it, it always seems to hinge on something else happening. With George, like, he's had so many projects. Like, we've had launches of this party that he's trying to revolutionize politics with. He wants a loverman, not a government, and all this stuff. And it's a beautiful, idealistic, mystical vision he has.
Right.
But there's always a disappointment for him.
Is what?
Well, he has a launch, and it just turns into a party, and he says, that's not it, we're going to have to do another launch. There have been two within the time that we've been talking, and I get the feeling that there have been so many more before.
Right.
But it's kind of become a thing with him and this, you know, very enthusiastic group of people who obviously want him to succeed.
Yeah.
And a party. But also is, like the party.
But the party is not a bad result. That is not a failure.
No, you absolutely.
Know, if you manage to throw a pretty good old bash.
He's an interesting person. He makes the world more colourful. That's all I'm going to say about
George.
He's
got his convictions.
And I wish I had that conviction about something, you know, other than the human. But just the older I get, the more cynical I get about that stuff. Hello, Mimi.
Oh, hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for hanging on. What did you want to say?
Well, I was hanging on listening to everything about Rainbow George, and I was thinking maybe I should hang up.
No, why? What do you reckon?
Well, I've got a really pointless conversation to have with you guys.
Good.
But I was sitting here tonight, and I thought,
I knew that you were on tonight, Kath, and I was so glad that Katie was joining you.
Oh, good.
And tonight I was, like, listening to music, and I was, like, talking to my nieces and nephews and everything, and they kind of beamed me back to the old Spice Girls, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys days.
Yeah.
Now, I'm pushing 40, and I thought, my goodness, that really beamed me back. My two daughters haven't got a decent pop idol or a pop band to get invested in. And they're listening to my old tripe, which goes back many years, but I'm trying to, like, I love music and I want them to get involved in music because I think it's good for your soul.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, it's time to get on the phone to somebody and say, listen, what's going on?
Oh, God, I don't know. You say you're pushing 40. I'm pushing it the other way.
Well,
no, but listen, you think of all the decades of your life. You had something to hold on to or something to get invested in, whether your parents liked it or not.
Yeah.
And if your parents liked it, you might have liked it. But you had something. Our kids are, like, stuck in YouTube.
Yeah, but I see they're looking at YouTube performers, like, yeah, other kids and stuff. You know, it's interesting because it's sort of a different aspiration, isn't it? Because instead of seeing glamorous fantasy figures, which in a way the Spice Girls were, I mean, they were not necessarily the girl next door, but the kids on YouTube literally are the kids next door. And I guess they're more like virtual friends rather than performers.
It was something innocent to hold on to, though. It was like, I want to copy their costume or what they're wearing. I want to try and be a little bit like them. Not that I was ever a Spice Girl fan. I mean, I love them.
Oh, I was. I thought they were awesome.
They passed me by. I'm more into rock and stuff. But I just think there's nothing out there for them to, like, go and seek. Mm. It's also, there's too much.
Yeah, there's definitely just so many options, isn't there? There's just so much out there. I mean, there's...
Which is a great thing.
Yeah.
But also, it's quite frightening. Because they just seem quite aloof with everything. They don't seem to connect with anything.
Huh. Well, I mean, there's definitely a lot of really good, glossy, shiny pop music out there and really...
Oh, for sure. There's brilliant music out there. I'm saying they kind of have lost the ability to connect with something.
Yeah.
Because it's at their fingertips.
Yeah, because there's so much out there.
And also it's so accessible. Yeah. Like, they don't have to seek it out.
That's it.
It's just
so,
like,
accessible.
Yeah, it's just a push of a button and there it is. But I know that people are really passionate about their favorite YouTubers. I mean, do they have particular favorites that they follow?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get on board. I'm trying to go, okay, show me them. And I just sit there and think, oh, my goodness.
Here's the thing.
Go and listen to Ian Lee and Catherine at night. That's better for you.
Oh, God, we'll warp their minds. Here's the thing. I don't think that the point is that you find things for them. I think they need to find it themselves, and it shouldn't appeal to you.
And this is this is what I'm looking for. But I think they're lost because there's so much ready for them.
Yeah,
they're not connecting with one or two things. You know,
But do you know what I was thinking about it the other day? I can't remember the last time I sat down and listened to an album from beginning to end.
I've been doing that tonight, and like I said, I thought, oh my goodness,
who does it?
I must.
Everyone now downloads
really
one song that they like.
This.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. And I'm guilty of that as well. But I think about my childhood, and I do want that for them. And I think the way the world is going is getting harder.
Yeah, like everything's so bite-sized and so piecemeal.
And it's so much. Yeah, I'm thinking, oh, just find something that you love. And even if I don't love it, you love it, just go with it. But they're, like, just so dazed.
Oh, man.
You know, there's also another way to look at it, which is, of course, we have treasured memories of things that we adored when we were young. And the things
I would like them to have the same.
Yeah, but the thing is,
they will in this generation.
But it might just be a different thing.
Yeah, it might be a different thing, is what I'm saying, is that, the things that we loved when we were kids were so different to the behavior and the trends and the, you know, the hobbies that intrigued our parents and our grandparents, it was all so different. I mean,
Of course,
you know, nowadays there's less of a generation gap than there was, for instance, between me and my parents, because I'm talking about, like, my parents were older and they came of age in the, you know, the middle of the last century. So, and nowadays it's kind of like the pop music generation, and it kind of washes over all of us. Yeah. But certainly with social media and YouTube, it's a whole different platform for entertainment. So I think that's really the new generation gap, is that they are going to get sucked into YouTube performers, and, you know, you are going to be baffled by it. But I don't think you have to worry about it too much, because it sounds like they are passionate about the things that they do follow.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing, because when they go and stay with my parents, who are Irish Catholics, mm-hmm. they could not be more happier.
Mm-hmm. Really?
And I think, oh my goodness, they've got, I say, you're going to stay with Nanny and Grandad tonight.
Yeah.
And they are so excited.
And what do they do when they're there?
Talk to them, I think, and play cards.
Yeah. there you go.
It's that thing of, you know, we were talking earlier about the White House and Bob Mortimer thing, slow TV is like, it's the new old. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's things are so fast. Now people want to be in the moment rather than looking for the next thing.
Well, I think when you're at school with them and they're coming home from school and they're saying this, that and the other, you try and accommodate that because you don't want to be like your parents.
Yeah,
right.
But yet when they go to your parents' house.
Yeah.
And they have that calm and that peace and that quiet. They're much happier.
Yeah. And they also, I think, make allowances for the fact that they're with old people.
Yeah. So they're making an effort to slow down. But yeah, I see what you're saying. It's almost like that's what they need to detox from social media.
Yeah, because they come home much happier. And I think.
Oh, they're more focused and more grounded.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it seems like maybe it's not so much, as we were discussing a minute ago, like a certain pop star to follow, but maybe they need something that can get them out of the house and, you know,
turn the screen off.
They're, you know, rollerblading or they're, you know, doing a sport or something.
Yeah, no, I do all that. But yeah. I just was starting to worry about my 13-year-old who is, you know, so into sports and everything, but she just doesn't connect with anything. Mm. And then the younger one is like her older sister.
Yeah.
Because she's so much au fait with it all.
Hmm. So
but
just
then I guess they're all different.
Yeah. So you're saying they seem a little blasé, huh? They're just like a little too cool for school.
Yeah, I wouldn't like them to get to my age and think, oh, like I heard, like when my niece phoned me tonight and she said, put this song on, and I put it on, I thought, oh my goodness, it's not the music I'd play, but I was beamed right back to that moment in time, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, I hope they have that.
Yeah.
Too, you know?
I think they
will. But it doesn't, well, hopefully.
Do you know what's really, they're really lucky with, is that you're interested.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. They've got to be, you know, strong women and.
Good.
I want them to just open their minds to other things, other than the screen.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Are you, can I ask a personal question? Are you with their dad?
Yes, right. John.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, John who phones up Ian sometimes and likes to play the piano.
Oh, right, okay.
He hasn't phoned in ages, but...
I just wanted...
Yeah, no, we're very fond of your show.
Oh, good. I just wanted to ask you something. We were talking earlier on to Michael, who was having dating problems, and he's got kids, girls a similar age to your eldest, by the sound of things, 14.
Okay.
Did you hear it?
No.
All right, so what happened is he's split up from their mum. He's been dating someone and he's just introduced her. The mum's also been dating other people and she's been out with a few people. Everything's cool. There's no animosity between the exes. But this is the first time he's introduced someone, you know, to his daughters. And he's quite fond of her and, you know, she makes him happy and he wants them to get on.
And they have a lot of interests, that shared interests.
Absolutely. So he takes his girls out. And of course, you can imagine you want them to all kind of.
Get along.
Gel.
They spent the whole time taking the mickey out of her weight and laughing about her behind her back to the point where she...
Oh, no,
she,
I don't like that.
She felt uncomfortable.
No.
Just thinking about 14-year-old girls, and my only experience at this point, although mine are getting older all the time, they won't stop. I've told them to stop growing up. But then,
they don't stop, do they?
14-year-old girls can be gits, let's be honest. And insecure 14-year-old girls who are worried that somehow their dad is going off with someone else and it's not their mum. And
yeah.
What would you have done in that situation?
Speaking from what perspective? Me as a mum who my daughters are going off with another man?
Yeah, no, or imagine you took
their dad's going off with another lady.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they would have to have the utmost respect for her.
Yeah.
That it's not an easy situation to be in, and that if daddy finds her, you know, if she makes daddy happy, things have changed. But however, they've got to accept that we both love them.
Yeah.
And it's just a different family. We'll work it through.
We were talking to him and we suggested that he got his ex-wife on board. And
yeah, totally. Listen, tonight, I mean, I think I'm okay in saying this.
Yeah.
But my brother is 54 and he's gone through quite a bad breakup. He's got a daughter of 23, a son of 25. And the young son is 18 today,
right?
My nephew. And I spoke to my mum the other day, and they're going out for dinner tonight, all of them, with the mum. And that was unheard of. But because it's his 18th, they've all got together, they're going out for a meal. And us as a family all went, brilliant. That's what the kids need.
Yeah.
It's his 18th.
Yeah.
Mum and dad have split up. He hasn't split up with mum and he hasn't split up with dad.
Yeah. Mm. And they're still a family,
You're adults.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're adults. Get over it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Thanks, Mimi.
All the adults, get over it. Anyway, yeah, thank you, girls. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, really
nice talking to you too. Nice, relaxed chewing of the fat is what I like. Thanks very much, Mimi. 0344 499 1000 if you want to talk about that or anything else you fancy.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. You never know just where the conversation will take you. On Talk Radio.
Right. Do you believe in sort of... We were talking earlier on about George and his conviction that there is something else apart from what we see with our eyes, you know, going on, dictating the course of our lives, basically. And it got me thinking about this story I saw about Jenny McCarthy. Have you read about this? She's got footage of... Well, what she says is a ghost playing the piano.
Jenny McCarthy, the sort of personality / comedian figure who was married to Jim Carrey.
Yeah, and is now married to Donnie Wahlberg.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
NKOTB.
My goodness.
Yeah.
It's a small group of people there at the top all marrying each other, like square dance, like a crazy square dance.
It's some sort of rotor system going on. So here's what it says. It says that the 45-year-old posted the clip to Facebook on Monday, claiming it proved her house was haunted. Wearing a long blue dress, Jenny is seen looking at herself in her living room mirror. But when she leaves the room, and with no one else there, the piano in the corner appears to start playing on its own. We can listen to it, right? You know, there's not an awful lot to see, but let me turn the sound on here. Okay, and... Here we go. Right, so she's looking at herself in the mirror there.
Okay.
Walking out of the room. This is security footage, apparently, if you're wondering why she's filming herself.
Donald, the kitten on the keys. Maybe it's one of those, you know, cute cat video type scenarios.
Or maybe they dubbed the sound afterwards, you know, dubbed it on afterwards.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty easy fix there.
Totally. People can do all sorts these days.
So are you asking me if I believe in ghosts?
Do you believe in ghosts?
Well, I could be convinced. I actually do have a ghostly encounter that happened when I was a young person, when I was about 5. I can't explain it, so I have to assume it was a ghost.
Go on.
It was a guardian angel. I think it was a guardian angel. And it actually happened. This is a very serious thing that happened, which was a creepy neighborhood kid asked me to go on a walk with him. And I thought, okay, because I knew who he was vaguely. I was 5. I think he was about 16. And he took me to an empty, burnt-out house at the end of the street. He took all of my clothes off.
Oh, God.
He led me into the basement, and he said, hold on. And he just whispered, like, stop. And a man walked past us, right in front of us, and walked up the stairs. So we were in this burnt-out basement, and this, for some strange reason, a figure walked past us and walked up the stairs. And it made the kid who had taken me and obviously was going to do something bad, he got scared and he took me back outside, put all my clothes back on, and took me back home and said, don't ever tell anybody.
Wow.
So that was a close call. And since that day, I mean, I didn't really think about it at the time because it wasn't traumatizing. It was just like, oh, there's this weird thing that happened.
Well, also, you were five, so you weren't thinking of it like a grown-up. You were seeing it through the eyes of a 5-year-old, right?
Yeah, like I was just thinking, oh, this is like someone's older brother, my little friend's older brother. So it wasn't a few years later, actually, when I started writing a diary. I was about 7 or 8, and that was the first story I wrote in it. And then I realized, okay, this guy was a kiddie fiddler, but more importantly, what was that thing that made him scared? I think it was a ghost.
Did you see, you saw a figure? Did it have a form?
Yeah. And the reason why I thought it was not a human or temporal or whatever was because someone standing 5 feet in front of us, a young man with a naked little girl, would have stopped and said, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. But he didn't. He just
seemed oblivious to you.
He was oblivious to us, and he walked right in front of us, did a turn, and walked up the stairs, just looking straight ahead of him. So I always think that was a guardian angel scenario.
That's made all the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
Yeah. So he saved me, that whatever that was. So then I think, well, could it have been a blind person? But this house was abandoned. It was an abandoned house. But I've never had anything like spooky, you know, like a glass crashing against the wall or a door slamming or anything like that.
I've had a few things. I've had a few things happen. One thing in particular that I can't explain, and a couple that I kind of dismiss as I must have been asleep still.
Okay.
When my eldest child was about 3, I woke up in the night because she was standing by the bed. And as I came to and sort of fixed on her face, it was all blurry.
Oh.
And it was a kind of her shaped child.
Yeah.
But there was no face.
Oh.
And it frightened me so much. I jumped out of bed, and there was nothing there.
Right.
Now I'm wondering whether that was kind of a night terror type situation, right, where I was half asleep or whatever. But it felt real. It felt like I felt like I'd woken up and seen her there, like I've done so many times since being a parent, you know.
Yes.
And that kind of, and it was just as I kind of came to and sort of spoke to her, I realised there was no face there.
Mm.
I mean, and there've been a couple of occasions, you know, when I was at university and around that age, about sort of 18, 19, there were a couple of occasions where I woke up in the night to what I think, to see a figure over my bed, and it sort of pushed down on my chest.
Oh.
And I ended up jumping out of bed.
Okay.
And you could almost feel the impact of it on my chest.
I've heard about that.
But that is night terrors, isn't it?
Well, I don't know, because you just reminded me of something else. So I used to work a lot in television in Manchester, and I was on a show called The Sunday Show on BBC Two, and the whole cast used to stay at this supposedly haunted hotel, the Palace Hotel. Anyway, it was right next to the studio at the time. And everyone in the cast, like most of the other cast members, had experience with the ghost. And it was that thing of feeling, of being in the bed and then feeling a weight.
Yes.
sit on the bed. So something sat at the end of the bed, or having the covers snatched away, or having the weight on the chest, or in the room, having the sense that someone was right behind them, like standing right behind them, breathing down their neck. Now, I never had that feeling, although after hearing all the stories, I would start to feel creeped out. And I was aware that that was me
anticipating something.
Yeah, psyching myself into it. But I've never had that.
It's just the fact that it happens when you're half asleep that makes me think, right, no, the easier, most logical assumption is that
your brain is playing tricks on
you. Yeah, that it didn't happen.
I have had that thing of being asleep and then waking up suddenly at hearing a voice and there's no one in the room. So someone's saying my name, like a man's voice.
And really clear.
Yeah, really clear. Katie. And then I'm at, you know, in my home alone thinking, wow, that was really...
Yeah, vivid. It's vivid stuff. Strange. That, you know, you're at your most vulnerable state, I suppose, when you're kind of heart, because you're still paralyzed, but your brain is starting to take control again. It's just, it's such an odd moment.
And I guess, you know, you could say, well, maybe you are there, you're more susceptible to, if there are worlds, you know, there's a porousness between our worlds and other worlds. And, you know, I guess you could be mystical about it and explain it that way, or you could just say our brain is fooling us.
Yeah, and I, you know, actually talking about that, I've had some really vivid dreams recently about my grandma who died a couple of months ago, but not just her, my other grandparents were there, but in the dream I didn't see it as anything special. I kind of forgotten that they died, you know, and then you wake up in the morning and you think, wow, how could I have just gone with it? And then I don't know, I don't really believe in ghosts, I'm going to be honest, I don't really believe in it, but it is kind of it's a nice visit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I say, I had an experience that seemed supernatural, and it you know, this ghost or this apparition saved me.
And you both saw it. That's an incredible
thing. That was the thing. We both saw
it. You know, with my experiences, it's just me.
Yeah. And that's what made me think, it had to be just a person walking past. But it, you know, like, a night watchman, or not a night, it was the daytime, but like a watchman in this abandoned building. But a watchman would have watched and said, you know, what are you guys doing trespassing? So, yeah.
I say all my experiences have been on my own. There was one where I was with a friend and we both saw this thing. And that is the one I can't explain. I'll tell you about it in a second. 0344-499-1000. You're listening to Talk Radio and things are getting pretty spooky. Mm.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
Actually, it's me, Katie Puckrick, and now Annie on the phone. Hi, Annie.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, thank goodness, someone rational.
I do my best.
Let me run this one past you. This is the weirdest one and the one I can't explain.
So, okay.
Me and my French exchange partner were coming back from a party, and it was kind of dusk, and it's dark, but not so dark that you couldn't see quite far in the distance, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But, you know, it was one of those days. And so we're walking up the path towards where my parents' house is. And either side of this path, there is quite a big green. So it's a wide open space. You can see quite a long way away. As we're walking up this path, we become aware that there's a guy behind us. And he had something over his shoulder, because we sort of, you know, as you do, sort of flicked our eyes back. And it was like tennis rackets or something, like a stick or something over his shoulder, right?
Right.
And as we walked up this path, he got closer and closer and faster behind us, to the point where we ran and he was running, and we ran all the way to my parents' house, to the front door, banged on the front door, and when we turned around, there was no one there, and he'd been on top of us virtually.
So did you hear footsteps?
Footsteps, and you could hear him. It was a bloke chasing us.
Oh my God.
It was the weirdest thing, and he was too close to have just disappeared, because he was right there, to the point where I thought my parents opened the door and I said, look at this bloke, and there was no one there. And then we sort of looked at the path at the top of the green, either side. There was no kind of foliage he could have been hiding in or anything like that.
Shrubbery.
And he couldn't have run away that fast.
Right.
It was the weirdest thing, and we both saw that.
Yeah, that's the key with that one, is it, that you both saw. If it had just been you...
Yeah.
It's easier to write it off as you frightening yourself.
Yeah, and, you know, the other things I've had have all been, you know, midway between sleep and wakefulness, and that's the most tricky time. But that one is one that I will never understand, and, that's the one that's got me closest to believing that there might be something else, but not really.
See, that's the tough thing about this conversation, isn't it? Because you make a decision about it before you hear the story. So now my brain is desperately trying to come up with a rational explanation.
Yeah.
I haven't got one right now.
The only one is I remembered it wrong, but it doesn't feel like I remembered it wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the fact that we both looked at each other suggests that we were both shocked by it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that you're both
fear
running.
Fear can do really strange things to your mind. And it could well have been somebody that was like 50 yards away, that's frightened you both, and then you've managed to convince yourselves it was much, much closer.
Yeah.
But then it,
then I don't know. It's a tough one. But this is the problem with these kinds of conversations, isn't it? It's very difficult for somebody else to put an explanation on it when it was very, very real to you.
And also, you know, you've got two teenage girls and one of them gets panicked, and that is very contagious, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, you can get swept along with things, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
And
because I was thinking about what... listening to the language that George was using earlier.
Yeah.
And
Annie, I should tell you, Katie, you're a psychologist, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we've spoken before.
She's brilliant.
Just to throw a little bit of rational thing into the conversation.
Thank heavens, about time.
I do try. And one of the things that I think makes the conversation with George much more difficult is his very specific use of language. And he's using the word true when what he means is I believe.
Yeah,
right, right.
And it changes the context of the conversation. If somebody is saying I believe, it's much easier for everybody else to go along with, okay, I'm happy that you believe that.
Yeah, don't
but
expect me to.
When using the word like true, it's the temptation then is to say, no, it's not true, which I think is what was happening with the conversation he had with Ian the other night.
Yeah, and with me. I try to be gentle about it, but just because he's convinced doesn't mean I'm going to be.
No, exactly. And it's and I think most of us are happy to accept in lots of different ways that somebody else believes something, and you can continue the conversation while thinking, well, I don't believe it, but I'm happy to accept that you do. Mm-hmm. But when you change the language, it creates more of a blocker in the conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because what you want to say is you're saying true, but it's not true. True is different to believe. I think that word is what's causing, what's making that conversation much more difficult.
Yeah, yes. Especially something that's absolutely unprovable, you know. And
yes.
And but he's convinced that he doesn't need to see any more proof. He's convinced that's to him done.
Well, he said he had stories from other people, so he feels like he has his data, you know, rounded up, and he's got all his facts and figures, and there's not a shadow of a doubt.
And there's all kinds of confirmation bias going on there because he believes something very deeply, and he's heard something from other people that confirms that. So he's grabbing onto that because it confirms what he already believes.
But dismissing anything to the contrary.
He can rationalise that away because he's got something that proves it. And that's why people get so deeply embedded in one way of thinking without acknowledging that not everybody else thinks that way.
Yeah.
And it boils down to, if I believe it and it's true and you disagree with me, then that makes you wrong.
I wonder, it
stops the conversation.
I'm interested in that, the psychology of that, because what's behind that? Because that's a lot of the polarization that we're seeing in politics now, whether it's, you know, for against Brexit, for against Trump. And what are people afraid of if they go, you know what, maybe there's a bit of nuance here, or maybe the person I'm supporting or the cause I'm supporting has good points and bad points? Like, why can't people just acknowledge that maybe it's not as cut and dried? Like, what are they afraid of?
Yeah, wouldn't life be so much more simple if people could do that?
Yeah.
If an idea or a concept is so internalized that it becomes part of your personality,
yes,
anything that disagrees with that becomes a personal attack.
Right. Right. It's a threat
to your identity. It's like you're saying, you're denying me. You're not just denying this point of view. You're denying my
Absolutely.
Very existence.
So, anybody that disagrees with me isn't just disagreeing with me. They're attacking fundamentals of who I am and what I believe. And it feels much stronger.
It's the fundamentals of what you believe and who you are, and also what makes you special.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. So people aren't hearing, I disagree with you. They're hearing, you are wrong. Mm. And not just your opinions are wrong, but you are wrong.
Right.
And that's where, when things become, exactly what Katie's just said, when things become so polarised that the conversation doesn't happen, and you just you get so entrenched in an extreme version of what you think, you can't accept anything else that anybody else is saying.
We all tell ourselves stories to justify what we already feel to be true, don't we, though?
Yes, definitely.
You know, it's not just about, you know, wearing a red hat and making America great again. You know, we all justify,
like, why I, you know, my procrastination techniques, you know, like why I need to procrastinate on everything I should be doing.
Absolutely. Why I was unreasonable to that person. Well, it's because X, Y, and Z. And actually, I'm not a bad person. That's what it comes down to, though, isn't it? With everything, I am not a bad person.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. It, everything becomes internalized. So you're not having a conversation about a topic. Everything is fundamentally about the person I am and deeper down what I believe. And it, once that's attacked, people feel the need to defend that. And the easiest form of defense is attack. So you attack back again. So you stop having a conversation about the issue. It becomes about I'm right and you're wrong. Mm. And then if that means if you're wrong, everything about you is wrong. It can't just be that one aspect.
Yeah.
Mm. And everything becomes so deeply polarized. And that's why everybody gets put in a box then. You're either right wing or left wing, and there can't possibly be anything in between.
Right.
And if you're right wing, you have to take on every aspect of what it means to be right wing. It all becomes very entrenched, and we can't. Everything becomes compartmentalized, and we can't separate anything out. And that's when we lose nuance.
I feel like, especially with politics these days, the passion and the furor behind it—not the furor like Adolf Hitler, but maybe—it's almost like supporting a sports team. So it's almost like
it's winning.
It's winning. Yeah, winning and losing. Yeah. And so you're so excited when. You know, I don't know.
When your side scores a point.
Like, you know, like say my dear leader, president, the thing in the White House. So, you know, the fact that he's making all these missteps and being a fool left, right, and center, but he's also angering so many people, that seems like a win for the people who are his fans. They're like, well, it's really great because he's riling up the snowflakes. So they
that's it. Triggering.
Yeah.
If somebody else is being triggered, then that justifies the position that I have. If somebody else is angry, then I've won.
But at the meantime, we're kind of dehumanizing each other, separating into two teams and seeing it as us and them negates the fact that we're all doing it for the same reasons.
Well, the other thing is we're all snowflakes and we're all triggered because we all get our feelings hurt and don't want to have our feelings hurt. So it's like we're all sort of accusing everybody else of the same thing.
How dare you have feelings?
Yeah, it's like, you know, you'd be a robot if you didn't have feelings. Like, yes, I'm triggered, but you're triggered too because we're both screaming at each other.
Over something that actually we can't do anything about.
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's probably the baseline problem. Right there.
But this is how it works. When I'm upset, I'm justifiably upset. Yeah. But when somebody's upset, it's because they're a triggered snowflake.
Yeah, right.
You can only really relate to the thing that upsets you. You can't relate to the thing that upsets other people because they're wrong and you're right.
Annie, having the insight you have and hearing the stories and meeting the people that you meet all the time.
Yeah.
Can you always talk yourself down from things, or do you find yourself falling into the same traps that the rest of us non-psychologists fall into?
It's a tough one. At work, when I'm in a work context, I can. But when I'm outside of that and in personal settings, I sometimes have to force myself to take a step back because I get swept along as well. It's that same thing with most of us with relationships. You can see the relationship mistakes that other people are making, but you wouldn't spot it if you were doing it yourself.
Right.
So when you're observing outside, it's easier to spot. When you're in the middle of it, you can't see it.
Right. So we've got 6 minutes before we've got to be out, and I've been told out or it slaps out. For me, right? we were talking earlier on to Matthew. I don't know if you heard his, was it Matthew? Michael, about his problems with his two 14-year-olds, meeting his new girlfriend for the first time. Relationship is good with his ex-wife. She's been dating a little bit, but this is the first time they've seen him with another woman. She is bigger than his ex-wife is, and the girls spent the whole evening picking holes in her. I don't think he defended her very strongly, to be honest, but I think he feels a little bit kind of caught in the middle of it all.
Yeah.
How do you see it?
Yeah, how should he handle it?
With that, there's probably an element that he's feeling guilt right now because he wasn't more defensive of her at the time. Mm. So he's probably now second-guessing himself into how he dealt with the situation at the time. But I think sometimes we overcomplicate what teenagers do. There is something subconscious of where they're comparing the new girlfriend to their mother, and the new girlfriend is failing in some way because she's not the same as mum. But they're not necessarily expressing it that deeply. It's just that there's that underlying current. At the same time, when they're being expressive about it, they're just being 14-year-olds. And like you were saying earlier, 14-year-olds are just a bit obnoxious.
Yeah, we've all done it.
And so it's coming out in a particular way. And I'm sure if he sat them down and said, right, let's talk about what you did and how mean that was,
yeah.
they would absolutely acknowledge that it was mean and they shouldn't have done it.
Do you
but
think
they wouldn't have seen it that way in the time.
Do you think they need to hear that reinforced by their mother?
Yeah, probably. Because if they hear it from their dads, they'll acknowledge it. But if they hear it from their mum, it will challenge them on the fact that what they were doing was a straightforward comparison, which is unfair because she's a different person.
Yeah. I also think they feel like they've been somehow loyal to their mother, but that's not what she wants. She wants him to be happy.
Yeah, and she probably wants the whole family to be able to move on and it not be stressful for everybody.
Yeah.
And so she can maybe have that conversation about, I get I'm your mum and you feel the need to be loyal, but that's not the way to do it, because what you're doing is actually making somebody else feel bad about themselves, and that's not what any of us need to be doing.
Thanks, Annie.
Yeah.
I worry because I've never been in that situation. I just look at it from, you know, why I would have been a rat bag like that, and also how it would feel to be all those different people with all those different perspectives.
Yeah. Because, again, it's the combination of it's not their mum and they're kids, so they're behaving in a way that kids behave.
And they literally said to him, why'd you go with her? She's not as good as mum. They said it. They told him the problem.
Yeah. But she's never going to be.
No.
No woman is ever going to be.
No. I said that.
So they're going to have to acknowledge that it's not mum and the next person isn't going to be mum.
Yeah. Oh. It's hard, though, isn't it? I wouldn't swap with them for the world, poor kids.
Oh, absolutely. It's stressful enough being 14, isn't it?
God, I wouldn't go back there.
Mm. No, hell no.
So lovely to speak to you, Annie. You're always a moment of calm.
Yes.
I do my best.
You're a good one. Thanks very much, Annie. You take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. David Kassif, I'm afraid we're not going to get to you because I really need to speak to Martin Kellner because he's got a packed programme coming up. I can see all his paperwork.
Oh. Packs, absolutely packs.
What you got?
Tons of stuff, I don't know. Well, we're doing our very, very popular feature, Not Dead Yet, in which Frankie Valli, delightfully, is not dead.
Good. You know,
the lead, yeah, absolutely. Lead singer of the Four Seasons, of course, and the subject of the Jersey Boys. So he's our topic on Not Dead Yet. We're doing the Scotsman's Film Club. The reason for that, or Scottish Film Club, reason for that is that the opens are in Carnoustie, and we've got a guy in a bar in Carnoustie. So it's Carnoustie. Do you know Carnoustie at all?
Kinda.
Yeah, sort of near Dundee, smallish place, about 10,000 population. But when the opens are on, all of a sudden it's 200,000 population, and this guy's bar gets absolutely swamped, but he says he likes to give them proper Scottish fare, which as far as he's concerned is Scotch pies, baked beans and chips. He doesn't put on anything fancy for them, so you know, wherever they're from in the world to watch the golf, they get Scotch pie, baked beans and chips.
And deep fried Mars bars.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, deep fried anything. You know. But everything is delicious deep fried, of course, as we know.
Everything's better crunchy. Yeah. Everyone knows this.
Yeah. You can call it tempura if you want, but it's still deep fried, isn't it? Yeah.
Thanks very much, Martin. So Martin's coming up after the news at 1 o'clock. I've got just about enough time to say thank you very much to you, Katie Puckrey.
Yes, and thank you, Kath.
Oh, my
Boyle.
God. We always have so much fun.
Oh, my gosh. We got all ghosty there at the end and mystical.
I know. I'm going to have to go on with my own now. I'll be looking over my shoulder. Thank you also for your company. I really appreciate it. Ian should be back on Monday, and I know he'll appreciate all the nice things you've been saying about him on Twitter and on the YouTube. You take care of yourselves over the weekend, and I'll see you on Monday. Night-night.